atop the skyline of downtown Chicago to 38 states and Canada. Your host for this evening, Justin Kaufman.
Health officials say 21 people are under investigation for coronavirus in Illinois, and Chicagoans are reportedly hoarding masks for future price gouging, or maybe for future Halloween costumes. Police are restructuring to take on Chicago violence, but if violence increases, the officers will be held accountable. Really? I don't know, maybe hold the actual perpetrators accountable instead? It's a novel idea. Zach LaVine gets snubbed for the All-Star game, which means no players will represent Chicago when the game is played in Chicago. But he still wants to be part of the All-Star weekend festivities, so look for Zach to be selling bootleg Scottie Pippen t-shirts in the parking lot. And 1 year ago, it was negative 22 degrees out, yeah? But today was the eighth day without sun, proving once again, there's always something to complain about. 312-981-7200. It's Justin Kaufman at 720 WGN. I'm with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Let's begin with the coronavirus. The Chinese National Health Commission says tonight, this is a new total number, tonight, just confirmed cases of the coronavirus in China, 9,682. That's an updated number. It just came out in the last 10, 15 minutes. 9,682 cases in China. To give you an idea of how fast this is spreading, it was, what, 4,000 when we talked about this on Tuesday? We took calls about whether or not you were worried. That was Tuesday. 9,682. And that number is probably going to go up because there are 12,100 suspected cases in China that are under investigation. Just to think about, yesterday they were talking about, I think they were, what, 6,800, something like that? It's unbelievable. To give you an idea of why this is serious, is that the coronavirus has officially passed SARS. You've heard that, right? It's officially passed SARS, which is the big thing in 2003. SARS infected 8,100 people in 9 months. Let that sink in. In 9 months, 8,100 people. It's been, what, a week and a half? Maybe if you want to get formal, 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks. And we are at 9,682. Like I said, 21 people are under investigation for the coronavirus in Illinois. This is according to health officials. And of course, in Chicago, we got our second case. This one, the first person-to-person case in the United States, which is such a weird way to say that. I've been hearing that all day in all sorts of news here at WGN Radio, but also other places, written as well, the first person-to-person. As if there's any other way. I mean, I guess there are at the beginning, but we're not talking about the beginning. I mean, I get it. It's a first in the U.S. to go person to person as opposed to someone who had visited China and brought it here. But just that phrase, person to person, like that just seems so weird. Okay. Now that we got that out of the way. 312-981-7200. So I ask you tonight, are you nervous? Are you thinking about changing the way that you live, the way that you travel, the way that you operate because of the coronavirus? And I asked that question at the beginning of the week. Are you worried about this? Is this something we shouldn't be worried about? And I got a lot of great responses back saying, no, this is media hype. Others saying, there's still a lot of things out there. Why are they building this hospital? So let's revisit. It's been a couple days. 312-981-7200. What's your thoughts on the coronavirus? Again, when you look at the number of people, it's still a pretty small number, especially when you're talking about the United States of America. When there are two cases and they were related, their husband and wife, you can understand. When you're talking about multiple cases in different countries, but still not anything that you would necessarily worry about because of the massive amount of population in those countries, talking about 4 people, 8 people, 12 people, 25, whatever it might be. But then there are other things, like we're talking about on Tuesday. Well, the Chinese government hasn't been necessarily that transparent. For instance, this story grabbed my attention. Western businesses, including Starbucks and McDonald's, by the way, temporarily closing over hundreds of shops. Let's just keep it there. Hundreds of shops. When is McDonald's closed for anything? That's my first cue. I'm like, oh, geez. You don't usually see McDonald's closing even for holidays at this point, right? I would think that they'd be the last one standing. You get a shot at Wuhan, and everybody in that city, in that province, like a ghost town, like it's a movie scene of Outbreak. And the only thing that's open is McDonald's. In this case, they're closing them down. The other thing that grabbed my attention, too, is Russia announced today it's closing its 2,600-mile border with China. They're not letting anyone through. Which, again, I'm not sure. That could just be Russia and China and how they do business. And Russia just doesn't have any concern about any of these issues. They just want to have a hard and fast rule. But it does beg the question, and it has us... has me a little bit worried when I see about these big swift moves. Mike, what do you think the problem is here? Are you worried, Mike?
Well, I'm not always worried about the virus. I'm more worried about the hysteria that comes along with it. Once you have people that start panicking, you know, you're going to have people clearing out supermarket shelves and, you know, they're going to start fighting for resources. I think that's more of the threat than the virus itself.
You think that if there was a rash or it went from two cases in Chicago to 50, that people start doing that?
Well, I mean, the thing with the virus that's kind of unique is that it has a two-week period where you can still get it even though you don't show symptoms. So once it starts coming out that there's more people that are infected with it, you're going to have people freaking out, you know, that, you know, their neighbor down the street might have it. They ran into him in the store and, oh my gosh, what if he has it? You know, and then you get mass hysteria and then it's going to kind of go from there.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, Mike. Thanks for that call. Hopefully it doesn't come to that. And I don't think it will. You know, the one thing at the end of the day is that this virus, which does make people sick, is not, it's not, and I hesitate to use this word because it is foreign, but it's not foreign to our understanding of viruses, meaning it's not something we have seen before, like a sci-fi movie that, you know, like Alien. We don't know what's going to happen. The next thing you know, you disintegrate in front of somebody. I mean, it's a respiratory virus. And like we had the Abbott Labs people on, the Virus Hunter, they're aware of it. They already knew about this kind of virus. It's a concern of how it spreads. But they are equipped to be able to handle this. But it is definitely something that's scary when you see these numbers multiply and multiply. And as Mike pointed out, it's because of the incubation time. So it isn't that this disease just went every day is like a monster. It just keeps continuing to grow. It could have all happened at the same time, and it's just taking 2 weeks for people to come up with symptoms. 708 says, my wife loves Chinese food but decided to stop ordering it because of the coronavirus, and she's a biology professor. Well, I don't know about that, but that's, I mean, there you go. Changing the way that you live and the way that you kind of go about your business, your personal business. Is it going to change? Are you going to avoid certain places? Are you like me? Today I found myself in the Pedway, when I'm coming up into the building here, which is a off-traveled area. Then when I get to the doors, went with the elbow to open it up, not the bare hand. The coat-covered elbow gets the public door. So I protected myself. It's what I do, right, guys? You can do that move if you like to do that move. It's just it's a shoulder. It's a little shoulder and an elbow. A little push out, right? You didn't actually touch it, so you're good to go. Survived another day. 217, have the woman and the man in Chicago who have the coronavirus been quarantined? Yes, they have. They're both in hospital now in some sort of isolation. And again, that was a story as well, that there was a waiting time. Because she came back. Remember, this is the same person we had the big talk about at the beginning of the week when, I think it was the beginning of the week or the end of last week, where the first, I think it was the first or second case in America was here in Chicago. So her husband contracted the virus from her after she came back. So you're starting to see a little bit of a timing issue. So she also, the public health officials here say that she didn't have much impact. I think I joked about that at the time because they kind of said, she avoided large crowds. What does that mean? What's a large crowd to you? If she was like doing karaoke with 1,500 people, well, that's not large. We think large crowd, like 50,000 and up. Oh, good. Okay, good. Just so we're clear. 312-981-7200. We got lots to do today, but this is what we're starting with. Got some texts and some calls coming in here. We'll take our first break. We'll come back. Are you changing the way you operate, changing your life because of coronavirus? Stay with us. Justin Kaufman here, 720 WGN, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're talking about coronavirus and whether or not you're changing the way that you live your life because of fear of the virus or being in public places. Like I said, I at least I'm not touching things with my hands. This microphone, this Rokin microphone, I'm already wiping it off. 773 says, I work for a Chinese company, and with the exception of Hong Kong, which is so far, all employees on the mainland are working from home. Also, all travelers from China to elsewhere must petition a need and then endure a 14-day quarantine at the destination. Wow. It seems like a lot. I mean, obviously, the World Health Organization today calling it a public emergency, a worldwide public emergency. And that's really done so they can get the NATO and the WHO can release funds. It's not unlike when they say that there's, you know, a natural disaster or an emergency situation when there's flooding and other things in a state. It means that they can access some of those emergency funds, but that seems to be what the World Health Organization and NATO are doing to help on the front lines against this virus. Dave's got a great question. What would it take to quarantine an entire city in the U.S.? Think about that question for a second when I give you the second part of his point. China has quarantined 17 cities. What would it take? Imagine if it was Chicago. If we had an outbreak here in Chicago and the federal government and the state of Illinois were like, cut it off, put a big roadblock on the midway or on the, you know, on the bridge, the Skyway Bridge, no one in and out of 94. You can't go downtown. You have to stay in your house. Imagine what that would be like. That you couldn't go to your shopping center. I guess, I don't know what actually that pertains to, because I was just going to think, well, then what about like delivery services? Could you get deliver pizza? Could you do Peapod? Could you do Instacart and other delivery methods? Probably not, right? Because the whole idea of quarantining a city is that you try to limit the interaction. But I was reading a story not too long ago about a guy who was living in Wuhan who You can walk around freely at your own discretion, I guess that's the idea, but it's like a war zone. It's the idea that nobody's on the streets and all you see is people in masks and, you know, proper officials in their vehicles and things like that. But yeah, just imagine what kind of intensity that would be like here in the Chicago area, in the suburbs, and everywhere else that you would actually quarantine an entire community. Especially the size of Chicago, because Wuhan is big. These are all bigger. Talking about 50 million people. There are 50 million people that are quarantined just now. And it's going to get bigger, as where our texter texted in about Hong Kong. Two 17 says, I wonder how long the coronavirus is actually active in Wuhan City before the news of this got publicized outside that area. That's a great question. It could be months. Could have been one or two and they didn't really know what they had, or they thought it was the flu and they weren't paying attention to it. There's absolutely a chance that that's the case. And I wonder, when you hear those stats, like SARS was over 9 months' time, I wonder if they backtimed. I wonder if they did the same thing you're talking about, 217. They backtimed and added to when the first person got it. And I'm not sure. 312-981-7200. Lee says, just the name of the city, Wuhan, sounds like a bad respiratory cough. That's pretty good. And then 708 says, why couldn't they have called it the Miller Lite virus? Both poor quality beers. Good bits. Strong bits, guys. It is an interesting moment here as we see that the numbers, we kind of start this segment at the top, is what we're talking about. That the Chinese National Health Commission tonight, at the end of day for them tonight, they have the number of cases of coronavirus at 9,682. That's just in China. So that gets us well over 10,000. Some of the news reports today were up at 8,000, so now it's up over 10,000. These are fresh numbers. It officially has passed SARS. SARS infected 8,100 people in 9 months. This, of course, just happened in a relatively shorter time. Although, as our texter points out, it could have It could have been much longer. In Illinois, they got 21 people that they're investigating for coronavirus. Now, the investigations, like we heard, you know, there's an incubation period. So when someone starts to show any sort of symptoms, they keep them under watch for a little bit. So there's a lot of investigations. Anyone who has respiratory signs, which could be anything, it could be any other viruses and other sicknesses. So people have to kind of go through the motion. And I'm not sure that everyone that they suspect to be coronavirus pans out that way. So even though there are 21 people under investigation, you wonder if that will mean there will be 21 confirmed cases. We'll know certainly soon, I'm sure, right? And Americans' fears about the virus, which we're talking about tonight, could cause even more trouble. According to economists, there's a worry this could tank the economy. We saw a little bit of that early in the week when Wall Street responded. But I believe what the economists are talking about. Well, what happens if you have an outbreak like they do in China here, where you have to quarantine cities and trade gets out of whack and deliveries get out of whack and day-to-day business gets out of whack? That could be interesting. As I mentioned, some Western businesses, including Starbucks and McDonald's, they've temporarily closed hundreds of shops. And Russia announced it's closing its 2,600-mile border with China. I guess you can just do that. Try to close the border here, and it's a huge political mess. Russia, they're like, nope, no mess. 773 says, why would you eat a bat? I'm not sure. That's the confirmation that it looks like everyone, all points are leading towards that this started in a bat. 708 says, I'm home listening. I'm babysitting my grandkids for a week. They're aware of the situation that their school in Western Springs. There's no carry out. There's no eating out. They're hunkering down for the weekend. My grandkids are freaked. Oh, that's a bummer. It's a big weekend, too. And I know it's probably a big weekend for you guys, watching your grandkids. You got to come up with some games or something. And you got to do some frozen pizza, which we'll talk about a little bit later. But yeah, 312-981-7200. How are you changing your life, your lifestyle, because of the coronavirus? That's the question we're asking here. I also want to talk, coming up here, Jeremy Gorner is going to join us in a bit. We're going to talk about Chicago Police restructuring today. Major restructuring to move a lot of officers off of desk duty and other special assignments, detectives, to work the streets in some of these high crime areas. Is that the solution? Should we see a significant reduction in violence? And more importantly, who's held accountable if it doesn't happen? Seems like they're saying the officers who are working the beat would be held accountable, which I don't think is right. It shouldn't be, right? So we'll talk about that coming up. And you heard Roe talk about it, and you heard the promos all day. Today, the final, in the 8 o'clock hour, the final, the championship matchup. Which film is the most Chicago film of all time? What's the best Chicago film of all time? Will it be Ferris Bueller's Day Off, John Hughes? Or will it be John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd's The Blues Brothers? Those two films, there's been a ton of arguing about this today on social media. 312-981-7200. We're going to need you tonight because it is close. Very interesting, though. And maybe this is a generational thing for the two films. But the poll that we put up on WGNradio.com and also we put up on Facebook on the WGN page, you can still vote right now. It is decidedly for the Blues Brothers. It's something like 65-35. But when you go to other social media platforms, like Pete Zimmerman, our producer, he puts it up on Instagram stories. It's 65-35 Ferris Bueller. So really, it's going to be up to you tonight. We need the calls and the texts, and we'll be pretty much judging in studio which film is the best Chicago film of all time, Ferris Bueller or The Blues Brothers. That's coming up at 8 o'clock. Already coming in, Blues Brothers. It's really Blues Brothers. What we'll get is a healthy amount of Blues Brothers and a healthy amount of Save Ferris. That's usually the texts that come in. Should be fun tonight. 847 says, my parents are on a cruise scheduled to stop in Hong Kong. The ship canceled the stop in Hong Kong, going to Taiwan instead. Yeah. And 847 will end our conversation tonight with, haven't even crossed my mind to modify my behavior because of this virus. Good for you. All right, we'll take a break. Come back with Jeremy Gorner and talk about this major restructuring to take on Chicago violence here on 720 WGN. 815 says, this is a Sally. Sally writes in, and thanks for thoughtfully. My daughter is a student at the University of Wisconsin-Platteville. On Tuesday, six students and six university employees came back from Wuhan. They were checked for the virus at O'Hare. They didn't have any signs of the virus at the time. The university is running as usual. The six students and the six employees are on campus. The six students are in a dorm. No precautions have been made as far as keeping the students and the employees away from anyone else. There are updates on the university website saying that nobody has been tested positive for the coronavirus. It scares me. They say they're working for the CDC, but it scares me that so many students could come in contact with the virus if even one of the 12 people who came back from Wuhan gets it. That's a very good point. And that's something I think that a lot of people are concerned about, as we heard from one of our callers saying that they're really trying to figure out the incubation period. I mean, as the gentleman who texted in about the Chinese business that he worked for, recognizing that if you're going back and forth, if you at all are have to do any business with China, that there's a 14-day quarantine process. So it's not great, and I would think that many Chicagoans or people from the Midwest, Americans, may have come in from Wuhan at one point in the last month and they didn't have a quarantine on. They were just checking for symptoms of the virus at the moment. So obviously that's changed. And I feel for you, Sally, but I'm sure that they've got it under control there. I wouldn't be too concerned, because I'm sure that it's not just the university. I'm sure that the CDC and the federal government are also aware of anyone who traveled to Wuhan, especially American citizens or university students. And I read something as well about university students, because that's a difficult situation. A lot of well-traveled university students, Chinese-American, Chinese students who go back and forth and back and forth that live in high concentration or high density places like dormitories. And what do you do in those situations when all there is contact? 312-981-7200. Phone number. We got lots to talk about tonight. The cage match coming up a little bit later. I want to talk about this story that was in the Washington Post today. It was really about the Atlantic and former mayor Rahm Emanuel. You remember with the Atlantic, they had signed him on to be a special contributor or maybe an editor of some sort. It's a big deal at the time. Well, I think he wrote one thing for the magazine. And then there was nothing else. And it turns out that some of the staffers of color from the Atlantic, had formally complained about taking on the former mayor. And it looks like the Atlantic has parted ways with the mayor. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Also, one of our feature conversations coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, let's talk about workplace rudeness. There's this new study out that says rudeness is on the rise. That we are just gosh darn sick of working with each other. that's someone got paid for that research. Someone got paid for that study to call people up and say, "Are you sick and tired of working with your colleagues?" Yes, I'll hit one. Beep. Great. Are you rude to them? Yes. Are they rude to you? Yes. All right, 100%. Talk about that and your experiences coming up a little bit later in the program. All right, let's talk about the big news in Chicago today with policing. The Chicago Police Department announced a major restructuring and redeployment of 1,100 officers. The comprehensive plan will streamline operations and deploy more than 1,100 officers and detectives back to the streets. The restructure, which is aligned with national best practices, other U.S. police departments, is not only to modernize the department, but also to get in line with the consent decree. Jeremy Gorner, the great Chicago Tribune reporter who covers crime and police for the paper, joins us now. Jeremy, good to talk to you.
Hey, good talking to you. How you doing, Justin?
Good. All right. So did you know this was coming? I mean, is this something that with the interim CPD chief, that there would be some change in the way that the police department deals with structure and strategy?
Absolutely, Justin. We got word of this really shortly after Charlie Beck came to lead the Chicago Police Department on an interim basis last month. Mayor Lightfoot had hinted in our end of the year interview on crime in 2019 that there were going to be some changes where specialized units such as narcotics officers and gang investigations officers were going to be moved under the direction of district commanders. Now, district commanders are, you know, the ones who run the regular police stations in Chicago, you know, where, you know, they focus on the neighborhood policing, the beat patrols and so on and so forth. But like, you know, these specialized units have really been kind of siphoned off from the traditional patrol operations, you know, that you see on the street with the marked squad cars so on and all that. You know, Lightfoot and obviously wanted to change that. You know, she basically felt that there's too many officers in these specialized units that do a lot of covert and undercover work and long-term, you know, investigations of drug traffickers and, you know, gangs and so on and so forth. And she wanted to move those resources to these district commanders. Hmm. They're still going to be doing exactly what they're doing, except, you know, they're going to be under the direction of these district commanders, and they're going to be geographically specific. So they're going to be moving to – the city's going to go to 5 geographical areas where you're going to have regular patrol officers working with these narcotics officers, these gang officers, detectives. You're going to see homicide detectives working in 5 specific areas instead of 3. That's the way it used to be, except these district commanders and these area deputy chiefs that are above them, they're going to have, you know, it's going to be more of a neighborhood focus where the goal is, you know, according to Charlie Beck, the interim superintendent, you know, he wants basically the, you know, these district commanders to have all these resources to fight crime so that they're more accountable at the CompStat meetings that happen every week because, you know, oftentimes they don't have enough resources to fight crime in their districts. If they have a problem in their area where there's, you know, a big drug corner, they have to call the narcotics unit. And, you know, they're completely separate from, you know, that's out of the district commander's control. They, you know, they have to do like a special mission on their own accord. Whereas now, these district commanders, yeah, they could call all the shots. They're like little police chiefs in their geographic areas that they oversee.
Well, I was going to ask Jeremy, but I was going to ask. Yeah. That, I mean, just when you say it like that, I would say there's a flip side.
But that's how Beck was describing it. Yeah. They're like police chiefs in their own little areas. They're in charge.
But when you say it like that, it makes you also think about, you know, the idea that if there are these little police chiefs in different areas, and there may be bigger areas, is there going to be accountability in this plan? Meaning if a district commander is not, if crime and violence is not going down in one area, does it make it easier for the superintendent to be able to point to them in the CompStat meeting and saying, you're not doing your job?
Sure it does. I mean, because, you know, part of the problem is, you know, and I heard Mayor Lightfoot actually said this to us last month. You know, she says, you know, I can't tell you how many times whenever there's, you know, serious crime that's happening on a given night, whether it's a shooting or something high profile, where district commanders or district officers who are working the streets say, I need help. I need more cops. I need, you know, to come and help. You know, it's, you know, where cops are running from call to call. Well, now, you know, these district commanders and these area chiefs, you know, now they actually, the hope here is that they will have the resources to get the job done. And so obviously with all these resources in place, you know, again, specialized units working under their direction, mm-hmm. along with detectives, they'll be able to have those resources.
Jeremy, will there be jurisdiction issues? I remember, and correct me if I'm wrong, you've been doing this for a long time, but I know that this has been a somewhat of a a back and forth in the city for a couple of years. I know under different mayors, they do it different ways. There used to be the idea that we would put more people into these specialized forces that could roam around the city. And then there's the push back to like this, where you're like, no, you have a boundary. This is where you work. I would imagine, I would imagine with the new way, flipping back to this again, it's kind of like how they either make it a pedestrian mall or not on State Street, but forgive me on that. But the idea being, they're gonna be some loss because, you know, gangs might and drug traffickers and others may cross over from district to district. And what happens in that case?
Right, right. So, I mean, I guess it really depends on the philosophy of who's running the show. I mean, when you look at outsiders, Jody Weiss, he was in the late 2000s, he was the first outsider to run the Chicago Police Department in 40 years. And, you know, he pulled officers from the districts, like gang units from the districts, to work those big specialized units because he felt that working under a single commander, you know, calling the shots citywide with these gang problems and these problems with illegal guns, that's the way to go. And, I mean, they were fairly successful at it. I mean, you know, they... You know, in 2010, the city at the time had the lowest number of homicides in 45 years. But under Gary McCarthy, they stayed down a little bit. I mean, but his philosophy changed, right? He wanted to take officers out of the specialized units, move them back to the districts because he wanted to improve trust. You know, but he wanted the community residents to get to know their officers and not be intimidated by specialized units that go around and respond to hot spots where, you know, crime happens, where they do a lot of aggressive policing. But now it's basically what you're seeing now is you're seeing kind of a combination of both. These specialized units are going to be doing what they've been doing, covert operations, like covert operations or like long-term or whatever. Specific missions, but they're doing it under the direction of a patrol commander who already has patrol officers on the street and an area deputy chief. So it's kind of a combination of the two. It's kind of like a West Coast style of policing, as Charlie Beck described. He said that's similar to what they do, I guess, in the, you know, in L.A., not exactly like L.A., but kind of like it.
Jeremy Gordner's with us. He's a Chicago Tribune reporter, covers crime and policing here in Chicago. One of my 217, one of our texters says, is this part of the consent decree?
Yes. So thanks for reminding me of that, Justin. So what we just described for the last, I don't know, 7 minutes or so was strictly on, you know, the reorganization plan with respect to fighting crime. There's also a second half of this reorganization where they opened a completely new bureau that is focusing on consent decree. They call it constitutional policing and reform. And basically there's several bureaus and units under this, you know, under this new unit, under this new division that's going to focus on the consent decree, everything from, and it's also going to focus on officer wellness, you know, and other issues like that, and officer training, et cetera. And it's going to be run by Barbara West, who's a longtime command staffer in the department. And you know, one of the things that Beck said is that, you know, because of her leadership role now, she's going to be the highest ranking African-American woman to ever, you know, work in the Chicago Police Department. Of course, you know, she's basically reports right under him.
Wow.
And she's, so she's basically running the show as far as, like, the police reform side goes. You know, you obviously have the independent federal monitor that's, you know, looking at things from afar, but within CPD, she's going to be running the show.
Okay, so there has been, you saw this week, and this is actually a really positive story. You saw this week that community groups and faith-based leaders, they said, we want to band together and we want to cut violence numbers by 20% in 2020. You see the police majorly restructure and add officers, 1,100 officers to a different, to district commanders throughout the city, primarily to get back to the communities and to bring violence numbers down. It seems like the mayor who put a lot of lipspeak to this a year ago in the campaign is actually making moves when it comes to fighting gun violence in Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's a little, it depends. I mean, you know, if you look at the crime statistics, I mean, they are going in the right direction. I mean, slowly but surely. I mean, the numbers, I, you know, just from what I've heard behind the scenes, Lightfoot is still not happy at all with the crime numbers the way they are. I mean, they finished officially under 500 homicides, but those numbers are going to climb with death investigations being reclassified. So there were about 500 homicides, in the city this year, and the numbers were down. So think about it. I mean, that's an improvement over last year. But that being said, it's still the third year in a row where we've seen reductions in violence. And I mean, and I know that at least they're hopeful that, this reorganization could help, continue that. I know it's only January, but of course in January, we're already seeing an increase in shootings and homicides. Of course, it's early. I mean, last year had that, the changes in the weather, obviously,
right,
the polar vortex.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, so I know that's something that the department is still a little concerned about. This, so far this year with the numbers being up a little bit.
My last question, it's a twofold question. One, talking to officers, do they like this change? It's a positive change for rank and file officers. And two, if I live in a neighborhood that's not one of the affected neighborhoods by gun violence, am I going to notice a difference?
Right. So to answer that question, one of the things Charlie Beck said is that, you're not going to see, you're probably not going to see a lot of the neighborhoods that are affected, even if they are a safe neighborhood, where you don't see a lot of violence, like especially on the northwest side or even the downtown area, those areas still have different issues like with robberies and all that sort of stuff. And you're going to see robbery detectives, you're going to see, and other detectives of other, investigating other crimes, still in those areas for sure. You're not going to see detectives who investigate shootings and homicides, who are often going to be in those areas. They're going to be, they're still going to be in the same districts that are affected by this stuff the most. The officers I've spoken with so far speak pretty positively of it. I think that, one of the things that we've heard as a concern is that Beck wants to move as many detectives as he can into the district stations, and just for space inside those stations, they don't know if that's, possible yet. They don't know if there's going to be room for all of that. So that's kind of a concern. So that's really the big thing I've heard so far, just logistically how it's going to work.
One of the best covering crime and police, Jeremy Gornan from the Chicago Tribune. Jeremy, thanks for hopping on with us. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Justin.
All right, there you go, Jeremy Gornan. I like the plan. I got to say, it is something, if you've paid attention to policing in Chicago in the last couple decades, as Jeremy noted as well, it kind of goes back and forth. A different mayor comes in and they switch it up and they want these, different police chiefs says they want the roving. Next police chiefs, no, I want them in the districts. Well, what do you think? I mean, I'm positive about it. 312-981-7200. Are you? I mean, to hear Arnie Duncan on the program, Wednesday or Tuesday, to turn around and have conversation with Jeremy about the major restructuring for policing, it does seem to me that the mayor's taking this pretty seriously, and these are pretty positive this positive movement. 312-981-7200. Tell me if I'm wrong. We'll be right back. 708 says, search YouTube for The Battered Badge. It's a 1980s Joel Daly documentary about the problems the CPD officers and the city face. The same concerns then as they do now. There's another thing I saw, I think Jeremy Gornan retweeted it, was a homicide map or kind of statistics for 1991 in Chicago. I'll look it up here. As you heard Jeremy talking about, and this is the one thing that always, I don't know, I always get a little bit weirded out because homicide numbers can be manipulated pretty easy. You can just reclassify it, or they're pending. And the numbers don't get added. And then they kind of get added in January or February for the last year, and the police don't necessarily have to stand behind a podium and tell us what the numbers were, and the media doesn't really go after adjusting those numbers. So what they told us at the end of January or December 2019, when they're like, they're down, it's 440. Can you believe it? We're down. That number continues to creep up. And as Jeremy said, it's closer to 500. In 1991, homicides by Chicago police districts, they went through the districts. The number one police district that had the most homicides was the Wentworth Police District, 86. I'm sorry, excuse me, scratch that. The worst was Inglewood with 96. Wentworth District was 86. Those are both South Side districts. In the Harrison District, the Prairie District, the Pullman District, Grand Crossing, 58. The number at the end of the day, when you go through all of the homicides for Chicago police districts in 1991, the citywide number is 920. Let that number sink in for you to think. In 1991, it was 920. In 2019, you're talking about less than 500, or according to Jeremy, maybe 500. That gives you an idea of how it's changed. I mean, obviously, there was way more 20 years ago, almost double. Now, many will argue, and I've talked about this on the program, many will argue that that's also almost all because of advances in medicine. Because if you watch the Benji Wilson documentary on ESPN, I think it was a 30 for 30 on the kid who from Simeon High School, Benji Wilson, who was shot and killed, a lot of the reasons of why he died was because there was really no trauma units anywhere near. The ambulances weren't equipped, send him to the wrong hospital. No one knew what to do, and they didn't have the equipment to be able to deal with gunshot wounds. That has changed drastically in 20 years, where most of the ambulances that are now called to scenes are able to deal with trauma and gunshot victims in the ambulance. I mean, they still got to go to a hospital. There's so much that still has to go into it. But that might be why you're seeing homicide numbers go down. Now, I don't have in front of me what the actual shooting numbers are, which would probably be more accurate as you look at that. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Texts are coming in. Most of it is just people talking Blues Brothers or Ferris Bueller. But Don in Batavia, he says, you know, most people, one of the reasons, too, why it becomes much more difficult is now guns are much more prevalent. So I can't tell when you look at and you talk that way where you say numbers are bigger, much larger in 1991 than they are in 2020, if that's because we've gotten better as a society, violence has actually gone down, policing is up, there are less gangs, I don't know. Or is it just a byproduct, yet you, not unlike inflation, you have to adjust because of all of the advances in technology and medicine, and hospitals and ambulances, are more people surviving gunshot wounds? It'd be a good topic to talk about at some point. I love having Jeremy on. That was great to have him. 312-981-7200, standing by in our PPG Paints green room, Mario Smith and Pat McDonald, the Uber critic. They are going to represent Ferris Bueller's Day Off and the Blues Brothers coming up the championship round. It's amazing, as I was looking at the brackets today, we started this with 64 films. And we printed it out and I took hand wrote every one of the 64 films. We went ahead and we seeded them all. And I handed it out at the beginning to about 100 people. 100 people got the first two rounds. And there was a nice variety of people here in the office and friends, things like that. But just to get us to a Sweet 16. And then we started having the conversations on air where we picked from the Sweet 16 on. That all started in December, right before Christmas. And here we are, as promised, on the final days of January, the day before the last day of January, getting this thing done. I'm proud of our efficiency, Pete, to be able to talk about movies and have this cage match actually wind up and be done before February 1st. And here we are. We started with 64 films and we are down. These two films now have to play in a basketball game in a football stadium. Or was that usually how it goes? So, where the poor kids have to play in the March Madness bracket in a huge dome that sits 100,000 people and that little court's in the middle. It's usually raised. It's probably the worst way to watch a basketball game in history. I've never been to one, but the tickets are for a Final Four game are huge. But yeah, when you see that on TV, you're like, something just seems a little off. I don't even know where they play. Don't they lose, like, they play like in where the Colts play? Like in Indianapolis, they just put a little parquet floor in the middle of it. That's what we're doing tonight with Ferris Bueller and the Blues Brothers, putting them on the little floor in the big stadium. And it is close. 312-981-7200. What do you like? Get on the line now and tell us why Ferris Bueller should be the best Chicago movie of all time, or the Blues Brothers. There's a lot of great arguments on Facebook today. A lot of great stuff. Both for and against these films. Really is. A lot of entitled smugness of the North Shore. A lot of cultural appropriation for the South Side. Lots to talk about. Ferris Bueller versus the Blues Brothers. Coming up next.
I want him dead.
Chicago.
I want him dead.
He pulls a knife.
Who's the U-boat commander?
He pulls a gun.
Hi, dudes.
That's nasty one.
That's Chet, Gary.
Now, Dustin Kaufman presents the ultimate Chicago movie cage match.
Bueller.
Tell me your children.
Oh, shedding a tear. This could be the last time we hear that beautiful montage put together by Chris Duffy. Welcome to the ultimate Chicago movie cage match here on WGN Radio. Our quest to find the best Chicago movie of all time. We started with 64 films, and tonight we are down to the final two. Jeez. But there can only be one winner. Two films enter, one film leaves. Tonight, the two left both deserve to be here. It's the North Shore versus the South Side. Wow. It's the best of Belushi versus the best of John Hughes. It's Maxwell Street and Daly Plaza versus the Board of Trade and the Art Institute. It's the Blues Brothers versus Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
It's 106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
Incredible. One of the worst performances of my career, and they never doubted it for a second. How could I possibly be expected to handle school on a day like this?
Well, this is definitely Lower Wacker Drive. If my estimations are correct, we should be very close to the Honorable Richard J. Daly Plaza.
That's where they got that Picasso.
Yep.
Rooney?
Oh.
Rooney, calm down.
Just a moment.
What kind of music do you usually have here?
Oh, we got both kinds. We got country and western.
Hi, I'm Abe Froman. Party of three for 12.
You're Abe Froman.
That's right. I'm Abe Froman,
the sausage king of Chicago.
Yeah, that's me.
Who wants an orange whip? Orange whip? Orange whip? Three orange whips.
Oh, well, he's very popular, Ed. The sportos, the motorheads, geeks, sluts, bloods, wastoids, dweebies, heads. They all adore him. They think he's a righteous dude.
We're putting the band back together.
Life moves pretty fast. You don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
Bueller.
Illinois Nazis.
I hate Illinois Nazis.
Christ!
First you trade the Cadillac for a microphone. Then you lie to me about the band. Now you're gonna put me right back in the joint.
They're not gonna catch us. We're on a mission from God.
Elwood.
Bueller. Bueller. Bueller.
312-981-7200. We'd love to hear from you.
Here we go.
Here we go.
Awesome.
We'd love to hear from you tonight on why you think Ferris or the Blues Brothers is the best Chicago movie of all time. In studio rep for Ferris Bueller's Day Off is Patrick McDonald, the Uber critic. You know him well from his various appearances here on WGN Radio. He writes for HollywoodChicago.com. He's been a chief tour guide for the Chicago Film Tour for 10 years here in Chicago. Patrick, thanks for being here.
Awesome. Thank
you. Awesome. And Mario Smith, the poet, the radio host, the raconteur.
Hey.
News from the Service Centers is a show you can hear every Thursdays on Lumpin' Radio. And he is here to fight for the Blues Brothers. Mario, good to see you.
On a mission from God, baby. Let's go. Let's go.
All right. 312-981-7200. I pointed this out right before, and I want to make this clear. So the poll we put up on WGN's Facebook page today, which got a number of hits and hundreds of votes, shows a decisive victory for Blues Brothers. It's something like 65% to 35%. But Pete put up an Instagram. On the Instagram stories of this afternoon, the same poll, and it was all Ferris Bueller. So it's very interesting to see that different demographics vote for this movie in different ways. And So tonight, as the WGN listeners are texting in and calling, it's really on you guys. That's where we'll make the decision on which movie should be the best Chicago movie of all time.
Don't Mario, insult anybody.
Mario, why Blues Brothers? You've been with Blues Brothers the entire way. Your last elevator pitch for this film.
It is still, after all this fight, I will fight every movie in the world. It is still the quintessential Chicago movie because of the locations, because of its connection to the suburbs, that it's not dominated by that, but it adds credence to it. The story is plausible, that two white men could have learned the blues from some black people. It is also a wonderful, well thought out love letter to the greatest city in the world. And it wasn't used as an escape from school, where that young man should have been.
He should have been in school,
him and his friends.
That's right. So he was running from school. The Blues Brothers were running to save the school.
That's right.
That's the kind of difference.
There it is.
Patrick, same question. This is your second time through on Ferris Bueller. What is it about Ferris Bueller?
Well, you know, last week I started off by saying it highlighted Chicago for the rest of the world. This week I'm going to tell you that Chicago is this trio's land of Oz. I think Cameron's the Cowardly Lion. I think Sloane is Dorothy.
Oh,
I think Ferris is an amalgamation of the Scarecrow, Tin Man, and the Wizard. Chicago's their land of Oz. They take the Lakeshore Drive brick road. They go to the top of the world, the Sears Tower, the land of commerce, Board of Trade, the land of creation, the Art Institute. They take in a sporting match, the Cubs, and they have a fantasy parade with the citizens of Chicago Oz, just like the Munchkins.
Nice.
And not that there's no place like home, but they found their home. Blues Brothers are on a phone mission to get a music gig.
Wow. All right. Well, they also drove a car out of a $500,000 house in the western suburbs.
That's right.
So no.
No. All right. Let's go to the line. Let's start getting some of these votes in early.
I like that,
that was good. Graham, who do you like? You like Ferris Bueller or the Blues Brothers? Graham.
Ferris Bueller. I think I relate to it the most.
Really? Why do you relate to it?
I'm 16.
All right, Graham, there you go.
North Shore teen
who's 16 years old. I love it, Graham. Thanks for calling in.
I'm a 52-year-old man from the South Side, Graham. Thanks for calling.
That's a good point. I mean, it's relatable to kids, maybe more than the Blues Brothers. My son is a 7th grade. He's 12 years old. So he said he saw Ferris because, of course, we showed him all the Chicago movies when he was too young to care.
Right.
So then every time you say, hey, Ferris Bueller's on, he goes, oh, I've already seen it. And then when he started watching it, he's like, I haven't seen this. I have no idea what this is. The fourth wall kind of look, all that kind of stuff had his attention. And it's tough to get a kid at 12 years old in this day and age to have attention for
to do
movie.
Anything.
For, over
and he watched the entire thing. Never went to his iPad. How about that?
Good.
Wow. Well, there you go.
312-981-7200. Ferris Bueller kicks it off with a vote from Graham.
Did you show the boy James Brown?
I did.
And Aretha Franklin. He was Shaka Khan. Pine Top Perkins. And John Lee Hooker. And they're all in one movie. Ray Charles.
There was a couple times I had to go, Miles, okay, who's Ray Charles? Ray Charles is a blind, he's Grammys, okay, you know what, let's move on, next, pass.
Next.
John Lee Hooker, yeah, blues guy, that's Maxwell Street. Maxwell Street was a pass.
That's right. It's okay.
A lot of that.
All right,
tonight is Blues Brothers. Ferris Bueller will take our first break. Come back, it's up to you guys, 312-981-7200, which one is the best Chicago film of all time? Stay with us. I'm Justin Kaufman, in studio Mario Smith and Patrick McDonald. We are talking about Ferris Bueller or the Blues Brothers as the best Chicago film of all time. It started with 64. We're down to 2. This is the championship match right before the end of January. A fascinating I mean, just an amazing run of 64 films and showdowns. I mean, it's amazing to think about all of the different films that have been talked about at length. But these two persevere. So the lines are lighting up. So let's get to some of these guys.
Let's
what do you think?
Blues Brothers, everybody. Stop playing games with me. Let's go.
Let's start with Jeff. Jeff, what do you like? Who do you like, Blues Brothers or Ferris Bueller?
It's got to be the Blues Brothers because Belushi and Aykroyd are both from Chicago. And the film was filmed in Chicago, and Bueller Stays Off was filmed up north in Wilmette.
That's a good point. Thanks, Jeff. He likes that. He makes a point. Patrick has a question. Is questionable on that. Aykroyd's not born in Chicago.
He's a Canadian.
And we pointed this out beforehand, Montreal's just to be fair, because you've seen this a lot, right? You've seen this a lot in Facebook today, that this is Ferris Bueller is a movie about a suburban kid. It's not even Chicago. The problem with that premise, especially when you're taking on Blues Brothers, I don't want to break everybody's hearts, but if you remember the film, they're both orphans from Calumet City.
Right.
They're not actually from Chicago.
However. You know, let's not let the headline ruin a great story, sir.
All right. Let's go to Gina. Dina, who do you like? Do you like the Blues Brothers or Ferris Bueller?
That's Dina.
Yeah. Dina, what do you like? Do you like Ferris or the Blues Brothers?
It's Blues Brothers, hands down.
Hands down? Why do you like the Blues Brothers better?
I mean, it's just so classic Chicago. I mean, they drive through Daly Plaza. I mean, come on. I mean, and I'm 51. I saw it when it came out with my mom, and yes, a lot of stuff went over my head, like, you know, the used prophylactic and all that. But I still remember laughing. My mom was dying laughing. I have friends my age with when their kids were younger, and they would have them watch Blues Brothers just because of the music. And it's just everything about it is just classic Chicago.
I like it. Thanks, Dina. Appreciate that. She's right. 312-981-7200. Keep them coming. Let's go to Rich. Rich, what do you like? You like Blues Brothers or Ferris Bueller?
Hey, this is Rich from Cicero. I think it's the Blues Brothers.
There you go.
Of course he does. Come on. Actually, let's get some North Shore.
Why the Blues Brothers?
It's actually Rich Lightow. I just want to acknowledge that Mario kicked my ass. Mario kicked my ass, so I got to throw my vote just for that reason alone.
That's so funny.
It's definitely Blues Brothers.
Are you in Park City right now? I see pictures all over the place of you at Sundance.
Nah, I was. I got back yesterday. I'm in the car with my daughter. My daughter, what do you say? I'm a Ferris or Blues Brothers? She's a freshman at Lincoln Park High School. Go, Em.
Ferris.
What?
Of course.
Oh, no.
It's all right. It's all right.
You inadvertently gave him
a vote.
Thanks, Rich.
That's
great stuff. Thanks for calling in. Awesome. Gary, who do you like? Do you like the Ferris Bueller, or do you like Jake and Elwood?
Jake and Elwood.
Yeah.
Blues Brothers.
Why the Blues Brothers?
Come on. It's a Chicago classic. Both the things that were in that movie and no longer there. I mean, landmarks. I mean, come on. The pawn shop on 47th Street. Let me see. What else? I mean,
the Dixie Mall in there.
I mean, Aretha Franklin, Cab Calloway, Henry Gibson. I mean, come on. We can keep going on and on. I mean, it's a classic. Plus, all the great songs that were in that movie.
You're right. Thanks, Gary. Good stuff.
We can keep going on and on.
Right on, Gary.
Anybody between 18 and 34 have no idea who those names are.
Yeah, they do.
Well, right now, it seems to be all Blues Brothers.
Mike,
keep it going. Do you like the Blues Brothers or Ferris Bueller?
Out of Blues Brothers, just to kind of piggyback off the last call, you got Aretha Franklin and Think. You can't get much better than that.
You can't.
You
did. Thanks, Mike.
Right.
That's right. He's right.
I told you, Justin Kaufman, the people of Chicago got my back.
Now, last week, Patrick, you put a point out because when you did the Chicago tours,
yes,
the people that come through Chicago, tourists that want to know more about Chicago history and film, what film are they asking for?
I asked one question before the tour. You know, we're seeing the city through the lens of your favorite Chicago-based movies. When you think of a movie made in Chicago, what's the first thing that comes to the mind? 90%. Ferris Bueller.
If I put the Blues Brothers on the side of a wall, they would be like, why have I been watching this dumb movie? I love the Blues Brothers.
Patrick, there's something to be said about...
But I hear you.
And you made such a great point at the beginning, but this movie, Ferris Bueller, plays to a different crowd, maybe, and maybe it plays to a younger crowd. These movies, they're not that far apart in time. It was 1980 and 1986, so I don't understand, but it's just true. There's maybe a more youthful movement for Ferris Bueller.
There's a timelessness in Ferris. Even though it's made in the 80s, we don't really see the 80s in it, you know. We can argue that with the Blues Brothers being 40 years old this year, that they're it's kind of maybe past, demographically, past its expiration date. I don't know if that's an argument, but it could be something if we started parsing people by age groups to see where we would be going with
Ferris
this.
Bueller went anywhere past Roosevelt Road, they would have made a sequel.
Okay, so I will say, that's a good point. I will say, which I think is hilarious, is that Ferris Bueller right now, I'm just doing a really small tally of just the early stuff. There are at least 50 texts that are on there I got to get through for the next break.
Wow.
But the votes that have been Ferris, one was from Graham, who was 16. The other was from Rich Lenkoff's daughter in the car. So also, it just gives you an idea that you're absolutely right, is what Patrick just said, that younger kids seem to be going with her. But that being said, Blues Brothers continues. You can hear how sentimental people are for the Blues Brothers, because, and they keep talking about the music and a lot of things you've been talking about.
It's just one of those movies, man. If you turn it on, you can. If you're of a certain age, you're like, that's not there anymore. That's not there anymore. And if there's a young person with you, that's a history lesson. Like, there used to be that thing. There used to be downtown, or that used to be on the South Side. No, you know, you can. It's more of a teaching tool. I will say this for Ferris Bueller's Day Off, because I saw that movie in the theater and I thoroughly enjoyed it. I could not connect to a lot of it, like Breakfast Club even. I couldn't connect to a lot of it because I don't go out to the western suburbs. I don't like the Chicago Cubs like that, where I would try to sneak in. And if we're going to talk about, you know, life and movies being kind of like on a parallel, if he hops in a parade in Chicago, he's going to jail. Anytime and any point in history, no matter what color you are, race or anything, you're going to jail. Yeah. The Blues Brothers actually went to jail. Realism. There you go.
Now, I will say the two things I noticed today, that the things also about the best Chicago movies of all time, both of these films had very little death.
Right.
Meaning there weren't like,
like none.
The Illinois Nazis at the end, I guess you could say they died at the end.
Maybe.
And a Ferrari.
Yeah, that Ferrari boy.
Those are the two things.
The one thing about that movie that I will say got me, that really, like, my stomach, when that car went out that window, that Ferrari, man, I was like, boy, I've gotten in trouble for throwing parties at my people's house when they weren't in town. It was nothing like that, but it's just to
so
imagine.
Much anxiety,
that was maybe the one connect. Like, you can't screw up when your people aren't home.
Yeah, right.
Here's an argument I have. Did John Hughes break the Chicago Cub curse? I think so.
Let me hear me out on this. Oh, boy.
Hughes begins the perpetuation of Wrigley Field as the place to be, which led to the neighborhood becoming hip again, which led to the Ricketts eventually buying the Cubs, which led to Theo Epstein, whose grandfather won the Oscar for writing Casablanca, to find the formula
Casablanca?
That won the World Series in 2016. It began with Ferris.
All right, let's
case, and Wrigley's plea to save Ferris.
The same crappy argument for a team that can't even sign Chris Bryant again.
You're right. It says save Ferris on the sign. All right, Squat. Yeah. Squat's on the line. Good to talk to you.
White Sox.
Yeah, right? Right. Squat, do you like the Blues Brothers or Ferris?
Blues Brothers. I hate to reiterate my previous when it was the semifinals, the previous text, but when you got Skamaz, State and Carney Municipal Offender Data Systems in there.
No, that's right. That's right. You got it. That's right. That's right. You did mention that.
And we're in, you know, when you got a blown up building and two guys are climbing out of rubble, and Jake looks as quiet and says, it's 8 o'clock. We're late for work.
All right, they look at their clock. It's so good. Thanks, Squat. Thanks for that. Let's go to Sharon. Sharon, do you like Blues Brothers or do you like Ferris Bueller?
Well, I love both movies, but I got to go Blues Brothers because the scene when they're driving on the beach in Wakanda, my brother-in-law, who was a lifeguard at the time there,
he's in it,
does a big flip-flop off the J-slide in the background.
That's so great. That's why this is so fun.
That's
There's so
I'm
many
saying.
Great stories of people been in films. Sharon, thanks so much. Thanks for that story. That's so great, right? That's so great.
I had a conversation today on Facebook before the argument with the great Pomona Ramey, who was in The Spook Who Sat by the Door and other great movies. was on the crew of the Blues Brothers.
He was on the crew.
I had no idea. That was some new news I found out today. And I'm not surprised, but I was like, whoa.
Yeah. So many people have texted in saying, oh, I was an extra. And Ferris Bueller as well is a big one. Eric, do you like Blues Brothers or Ferris?
Oh, hands down, I'm going with the Blues Brothers. I remember when I was a kid. I'm 56, and I remember when I was a kid shopping with my parents at Dixie Square Mall in Harvey. But the main reason is, not too long ago, I visited that fishing shack that's in the scene where they're jumping the 95th Street Bridge. Yeah, great fish, by the way.
Yes, absolutely.
Still delicious.
All right, thanks, Eric.
Everybody's confessing their age tonight.
All right, and one more before we go to the break. Let's go to Carl. Carl, you like Blues Brothers or you like Ferris Bueller?
Ferris Bueller.
There you
go. I'm 62 years old.
No, you're not. Reason,
I am too.
Really?
I'm 62 years old.
All right.
Okay, what do you say?
And the reason that I like Ferris Bueller's is because a lot of the scenes, I think more of the scenes, were shot in Chicago than the
Blues Brothers
were.
Yeah, maybe.
They're going to Chicago. It's a destination.
Thanks, Carl. You're absolutely right. Well, you can make an argument the Blues Brothers are, too. They go into Chicago, they go out of Chicago,
yes,
they come back.
Yes, they go in and out. The first few frames of the movie, they pass the film is outside the
city. All right. Yeah. Patrick McDonald and Mario Smith are here. We're fighting about Blues Brothers versus Ferris Bueller. The winner tonight is going to be the best Chicago film of all time. Unbelievable we're here. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Stay with us. All right. 312-981-7200. I apologize that I took a second to come back to the microphone because I've been tallying votes. There have been hundreds of texts that have come in tonight, which keep it up. 312-981-7200. We're at the halfway point of our championship match and the Ultimate Chicago Movie Cage Match between the Blues Brothers and Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Which film is the best Chicago film of all time? Patrick McDonald's here to rep for Ferris Bueller, Mario Smith for the Blues Brothers. And just looking at the numbers of people who are calling in and the texts, as you heard from people calling in, it is favoring the Blues Brothers so far in the first half. There's still time. But right now, it's a lopsided Super Bowl.
Time's running out, baby.
It's like one of those 90s Super Bowls with the Niners and the Chargers or something like that, where you're like, oh, why did I buy all these chips?
I shouldn't have eaten all of that before the game.
All right, let's keep going. Let's go to Mike. Mike, what do you like? You like Blues Brothers or you like Ferris?
Blues Brothers.
There you go. Why Blues Brothers?
Blues Brothers. So beginning of the movie, when they get pulled over,
yep.
Half a pack of cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up on that street in Park Ridge, northwest side of Chicago.
Awesome. That's so good.
Park Ridge, see what I'm saying?
So Edison Park, Chicago.
Park Ridge.
Chicago is like my old neighborhood. It happened to me in Park Ridge, but I grew up on that street.
I love it.
They drove by a drugstore where I used to play video games.
That's great. I love it. There you go, Mike.
Yeah, all that. And then I have family on the south side, Midlothian. They drove through the mall on the south side.
Right.
Where my family lived by.
That's it. Right.
Yeah.
Nice job, Mike. Thank you. Thanks for calling in.
Good old Midlothian.
Mm-hmm. He does make a point, though. Everybody who texts in when they explain, they're like, Ferris is not a Chicago movie. They grew up in the suburbs. But even listening to Mike, you're like, well, he's mentioning Park Ridge, Midlothian. Yeah. Harvey is where that mall was at.
Yeah.
There's a lot of shots.
50% of the movie is outside Chicago. Of Chicago.
The most important parts of that movie were here.
But isn't that funny, though, Patrick, that the myth and the reputation, because I can't tell you how many people today were on my Facebook page are yelling at me in all caps saying Ferris is not a Chicago movie because they're not from Chicago, and not even thinking about that. Yeah. Perhaps that's the same story with the Blues Brothers.
Backstory.
Yeah, well, you know what? At least nobody in the Blues Brothers wore a stupid Detroit Red Wings sweater.
That's a big
That still bothers
problem.
Me. That still bothers it's me.
Symbolic of teenage freedom.
No, please. Not the dead wings. Anybody
That's
but the
so
dead.
Good.
You don't walk in
That's
the Wrigley. I don't walk
Teenagers
in the Wrigley Field.
Don't wear the. You yeah,
wouldn't.
Sports outfits
he wouldn't have made it out of
teams.
Wrigley Field with that Red Wing shirt on.
Mario, where were you? What was your team when you were 16, 17 years old?
Baseball?
Any of them?
Anything that wasn't
Any
the
Chicago?
Cubs? Yeah.
Something tells me it was the football team du jour. You're really into whoever was the big
Chicago
team
Bears.
In the 80s.
Yeah, Chicago right. Bears.
Go Bears.
Bears always.
All right, let's go to Jack. Right. Jack, you like the Blues Brothers? You like Ferris Bueller?
Oh, it's got to be the Blues Brothers. I live Ferris Bueller.
You love Ferris Bueller?
Or you? I lived it.
Oh, you lived it.
Well, there you go. Then why are you going with the Blues Brothers? Are you a blues man or are you a lived Ferris Bueller?
I guess I like the Blues Brothers because of the music. Yeah, I'm 77 years old.
Okay. My man.
I took the trip down to Chicago from the North Shore on my motorcycle with three other guys at 85 miles an hour down the outer drive.
Yellow brick road of Lakeshore Drive.
Right. Amen. Right. Amen.
Amen.
And it was fun, but nah, Chicago movie, it's got to be the Blues Brothers.
Oh, there you go. All right. Thanks, Jack. Thanks for the...
Jack, 77, right, riding motorcycles.
Patrick, you're from your job as a film critic. Mm-hmm. When you look at both of these films, regardless of being the best Chicago film, which one do you say is the better film?
You know, they each have their particular charms, but I have to admit that I think The Blues Brothers is a better film.
Yeah.
But that is not to say it represents Chicago.
No, but you're right. I asked a different question.
Yeah, right. You did.
That's right, because it's funny because I got chastised as well and mixing it up today on social media because I said going back to watch The Blues Brothers, and Pete Zimmerman agrees as well as he went back and watched it at the same time. There's a little bit of it's a really slow movie. There's a lot of times where the jokes that you remember are a lot slower than you remember them. And I went and watched Ferris again, and I actually had the opposite reaction. I'm like, this is a lot sharper than I thought it was. Right. I thought I would see a lot of, because I got really annoyed with Ferris Bueller as a kid or watching it as many times as we did. When Cameron goes in his depression, that movie just slows to
down.
A crawl.
For a teenager,
and it's like, oh god. Watching it again just this last week, I'm like, well, it wasn't that bad. Like I was like, I actually was
different
interested.
Perspective too. Yeah, right. Because I think we treat stuff like depression and mental illness a little bit differently now than we did then. I'll say this, though, and I think you might agree. Landis and Hughes kind of did the same style of filming, where their points of views of their main characters were really like you saw them. You saw what they were thinking, their plans, and the plot wasn't like hidden. You knew what Jake and Elwood were out to do.
You knew what Ferris was trying to accomplish.
Right. I think... For me, what made me not like Ferris as much as the Blues Brothers is because I looked at it kind of, I didn't realize it at the time, but it was the same directorial style to me. And it just kind of was like, well, why is he copying Landis' style? Why doesn't he have a style of his
own? I saw a story today, a think piece, that Ferris Bueller and John Hughes, and I don't think he ever talked about this, but that there may have been some inspiration
From the Blues Brothers.
Oh,
I can see that.
Well, they're both journey films.
Yeah.
I can see that. Hmm. Look at us having a civil conversation.
Yeah, I know. We get so civil here. You know, it's when the announcers have to come up with something else to talk about when it's a blowout. They're like, let's, I was golfing the other
day. This rain won't stop, Ronnie. The other thing, though,
the negatives is we've kind of done the format on this program has been the positives and the negatives. Both of these films are not perfect. The Blues Brothers, well, being much more diverse, because and like you said, I mean, the music and bringing back, and we've talked about the idea of bringing back a lot of those R&B and blues stars.
Icons.
They were out of style at that point.
Yeah. Right?
That was bringing them back to the limelight. That's before Aretha Franklin had her 80s resurgence.
Right, absolutely.
But beyond Carrie Fisher, who is a scorned ex-girlfriend, beyond the nun who couldn't be more stereotypical as a nun, and Aretha Franklin, are there any other women in that film? I mean, it's mostly that's a dude film.
Twiggy's in it.
Yeah, Twiggy's in it. Now, that being said, I'll say the same thing for Ferris Bueller. You'll be hard-pressed besides maybe the very interesting parade scenes that showed a very integrated, diverse Chicago, which it is at times, but usually not. That's what I thought was really interesting about that, because showing all of the America and the world of Chicago that was getting along in the middle of the 80s.
Right.
But outside of that, any characters with any that weren't the criminals, no people of color across the board. That's a mark against Ferris Bueller.
I mean, and I think that's a sad fact in most John Hughes films.
Yeah.
Like almost all of them. Unfortunately, he never had a chance to fix that. And I think he could have if he wanted to. But then again, I mean, you know, people write stories with different kinds of things in mind. And he may not have had, I can't speak to his intention.
Right.
But when you look at a lot of those Hughes movies, it's like, wow, there's nobody to. And again, listeners, relax. I know. Don't, I'm not doing it. I'm just saying there weren't a lot of people that looked like me in a John Hughes.
No, I brought it up.
It's a point of view thing too. Hughes wrote from his point of view.
Yeah,
it was inside his head, his experiences. If you read his stories in the 70s in National Lampoon, a lot of them became movies. Vacation, Christmas Vacation. It was just him. It was John Hughes.
Because I imagine if I made a movie,
I'd like to see that movie.
It would be an interesting movie. Let's just leave it at that.
All right, let's go to some callers again. Dale, do you like the Blues Brothers or do you like Ferris Bueller?
Hey, I like the Blues Brothers.
Yeah, why do you like the Blues Brothers?
You know, I took a journey down there last Sunday to meet my buddy Pat McDonald to get some awards downtown. And, we went by some of the scenes down there, and, you know, we thought we had a great time down there, seeing a lot of the scenes down there. And, you know, we talked to Pat for a while, and he never really mentioned that he liked Ferris Bueller, so we thought...
We need to screen these calls better.
We thought we were, he was a big Blues Brothers fan, so he didn't really know nothing about that.
You had Rich, and I have
Thanks,
Dale.
There you Thanks, go. Dale.
Dale got Dale. You.
All right, Terry, you like the Blues Brothers, or you like Ferris Bueller?
Definitely like the Blues Brothers.
Yeah, well, what is it about the Blues Brothers?
The primary reason is the music.
Yeah.
It was just, Chicago music, and a perfect example, nothing has changed. When they went down to Kokomo, and they got behind that chicken wire and got everything thrown at them until they changed their music.
It's a rawhide. Right?
That was just 100% Chicago.
Yeah, it really was. There's so much about that, and thank you for the call, Terry. It's hard to say. These are great films, and it warms my heart to see so many comments today and on social media. There were hundreds and hundreds saying this is a tough one. These are the two films.
Really,
these are the
one.
Two films. This just to give you an idea.
They're and passionate.
To give you an idea. Here's how we got here. The Blues Brothers beat Chain Reaction, which was a okay Keanu Reeves movie in the first round. Then they took off and beat League of Their Own.
Hmm.
Then the Sweet 16 got rid of another John Hughes film, Uncle Buck, and then finished off Wayne's World and The Untouchables to get here.
Yeah,
that's pretty good. That's pretty good. And if you look at Ferris as well, another Keanu Reeves. Keanu Reeves got all the 16 seeds in the tournament. Beat Hardball. Harry Met Sally, which is not really a Chicago film, but Harry did meet Sally in Chicago. Mm-hmm. Cooley High. His Ferris Bueller,
Beat Cooley High,
Risky Business, and last week The Fugitive. So these two films have been the favorites coming into this match.
It sounds like
the Blues Brothers has a commanding lead. I haven't gone through the text. We're going to take a break right here, our last one, and we'll come back and we'll talk a little bit more about Ferris Bueller and the Blues Brothers while I tally up all of these texts that have been coming in. Who knows, Patrick? It could be a Ferris Bueller explosion on the text line. 312
early and often.
312-981-7200 is our phone number. Mario Smith and Patrick McDonald here. It's the championship match between the Blues Brothers and Ferris Bueller here on 720 WGN. 312-981-7200. It's the ultimate Chicago movie cage match. The last night, the championship matchup between Ferris Bueller's Day Off and Blues Brothers. Let's go to Jim, who's on the line. Jim, do you like Ferris Bueller or do you like the Blues Brothers?
Oh, it's the Blues Brothers all the way.
Yeah.
10 years ago, my kid was 13 years old. We took him and a bunch of his buddies to the outdoor in McHenry. It was the Blues Brothers and Animal House. They loved it. They repeated all the lines. He dressed up to Halloween once, him and a buddy as Jake and Elwood.
That's what I'm saying.
Just classic. They could repeat the lines.
That's great.
Awesome. It's really a musical if you think about
it. Yeah, it's a musical comedy for sure.
But these guys... I love the line where they drive the Nazis off the bridge and the cop comes up and they ask what's going on. I mean, that's just classic. Classic cop. And my kid still says it. All I got to do is say one line and he'll just repeat that thing.
He's an Illinois Nazi.
I hate Nazis. That's the Illinois Nazi. I mean, just classic.
All right. Thanks, Jim. Appreciate it, man. That's great.
Can go to a Halloween party as the trio. If you have just three people, you can be Sloan.
You would. It's a good one, too. Yeah,
Ferris.
For sure.
Every skinny guy that had a fat friend could be Jake and Elwood.
Jake and Elwood.
And vice versa.
As somebody pointed out, when you're talking about Chicago movies, the best Chicago movies of all time, it's pretty simple, and it breaks down to this. Do they dress up as Ferris and Cameron and Sloan at Bulls games and Bears games and Cubs games and Sox games? They don't.
Have they taken that and just walked it right into the magma of Earth?
847 says Blues Brothers.
Beat me while I'm down.
All right, I'm going to read some of these texts. Been driving for the last hour and a half. Finally pulled over because I got to say Blues Brothers all the way, baby. 847, Blues Brothers just too iconic. Both were great, fun movies, but the Blues Brothers is a stuff of legends. Both great movies, but I got to say Blues Brothers all the way. Ferris Bueller says 847. 773 says the Blues Brothers, hands down, no question asked, period, from the north side to the south side to downtown, all across the city.
There you go.
There you go.
There you go. Well, there you go. Yeah. There you go, Justin Coffin. There you go.
Are you going to call it?
I'm not going to call it just yet.
All right.
You need election night.
Mary
music.
Says, I'm
Come
49.
On, you Ferris right. people.
Mary says, I'm 49 years old and I've never seen the Blues Brothers. That's interesting.
Come
That's,
to my crib, Mary. I'll show it to you.
Okay. 847 says, Ferris, Glen Burrard North grad, John Hughes. Got to go, Ferris.
Yeah.
A lot of Ferris Bueller. A lot of Save Ferris. That's how people text in.
Save Ferris. Early and often. Save Ferris.
That's still a thing.
312 says, Ferris is the king. Chicago is a blue collar town, says 708. Blues Brothers is a total city movie. Ferris is a strictly north side white collar show.
Wow.
I don't know.
It's a meat and potatoes movie.
Blues Brothers, the X's scenes with Carrie Fisher, just the best, it says 773. There's so many great texts that are coming in. I'm trying to get to all of them. Ferris Bueller is a spoiled punk. Blues Brothers, just the performances alone. I like Jake and Elwood over Ferris any day. I was a cop in Mount Prospect for 30 years, and I used my MP squad cars in the movie. That's why I got to go Blues Brothers. So good. R-E-S-P-E-C-T, Blues Brothers. Blues Brothers, true Chicago movie. Ferris, just a rich kid from the North Shore.
Who visited and hopped in a parade illegally.
I would say upper middle class. They were both professionals.
312 says, I strongly disagree with my son, Graham. He's a.k.a. the kid critic. That was Graham.
Yeah.
He's on a, he says, the 312 says, I'm on a mission from God to convert him to choosing the Blues Brothers.
There you go.
But right. I do love Ferris. So there's so many Thanks, great texts Brian. Tonight. Let's go back to the lines. Tony, what do you like? You like Blues Brothers or Ferris Bueller?
Oh, got to be Blues Brothers, hands down.
Yeah? You love the Blues Brothers?
I'll tell you what, I was on the original Maxwell Street, both selling, buying, eating, smoking. I mean, it was just an experience that nobody will ever see again. And when I see that on the television now, it reminds me of how days used to be back when it used to be a real city.
Yeah.
There you go.
There you go.
It's still a real city.
Thanks, Tony.
It's real prefab and IKEA, but it's still a real city.
Let's go to Rick. Rick, you like the Blues Brothers? You like Ferris?
Blues Brothers.
Blues Brothers.
Right. I actually, mine was Code of Silence, but I guess that was gone a long time
Code
ago.
That's a good movie. That is
wow,
a good movie.
Wow, I forgot about Code of Silence. Right.
Thanks, Rick. All right, 847. I don't have a name for you, but do you like Blues Brothers or do you like Ferris Bueller? Go ahead. 847. That's
I like the Blues Brothers.
I like Ferris.
Right, kind of skip off of that one. Come back to that. David, do you like the Blues Brothers or you like Ferris Bueller?
Yeah. I like the Blues Brothers. They were on a mission from God.
That's right. How are you going to go against God?
Oh, I love it. Thanks, David.
Ism.
You could go against God.
815 says God. Bueller all the way.
Right.
The Blues
That's
Brothers.
Three votes.
224 says the Blues Brothers had Princess Leia in it, for crying
there
out
loud. There you go. That's right.
847 says Cameron should have worn a Hawks jersey, and I would have gone for Ferris.
I probably would have myself.
Blues Brothers, like all Sox fans.
That's right. Say
Ferris
that.
Ferris Bueller because of the museum in Chicago, the Art Institute. You mentioned last
there
week.
There you go.
That was a great
first time it was ever filmed inside.
That wow. is one of the best parts of that movie, if I may say so. The Art Institute, just the Art Institute is a great place anyway, mm-hmm. but to see the way they treated it properly. They didn't disrespect that building.
As much as I enjoy, and I totally 100% agree that Blues Brothers is the better musical comedy of the two.
Mm-hmm.
The music that was used in yes. Ferris Bueller is very unique. When you go back and look, right. if they're not using top 40 songs. Yeah, he's using. He's. It's the first time we hear.
Yeah.
That's the first time we heard that song. He made a lot of. It was just kind of like a perfect 80s new wave soundtrack.
You know, interestingly enough, the Art Institute scene, they had difficulty with that scene. They didn't know where to put it because Hughes was obsessed with showing the art. So they actually moved it, and that's how it worked.
Mm.
Doing a lot of research for this wow. film, I found a lot of trivia.
It's interesting, too, because the song that they're playing in that scene, which is iconic, is I think Duffy was telling me it was a Dream Academy song, but it was actually the riff from the Smiths.
Mm.
It was Please, 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 Let Me Get What I Want, but it was the same riff they had covered.
This is
interesting.
This has nothing to do with that. I heard one of the most depressing Smith songs today. I had to turn it off. I was like, oh my God, that's got to be
a different.
Smiths.
That's a different segment,
Holy
right?
Holy cow, it was the saddest tune ever.
Let's go to Phil. Phil, what do you like? Phil, you like the Blues Brothers or Ferris Bueller?
It's got to be
Brothers.
Yeah.
I'm from Waukegan, and a lot of people don't know, but they actually filmed the Blues Brothers part of it in Waukegan.
There you go.
On the Amstutz Highway that was supposed to be the highway, well, we call it the Highway to Nowhere, but it goes from, it's supposed to have gone from Chicago to Milwaukee, but it's only about a mile and a half, and actually, Chicago PD and Chicago Fire, those guys actually film sometimes on that highway, too.
There you go. Good, but
you'll,
good info.
You'll be able to see an, you'll be able to see an exit to Washington Street. If you look closely, it's when they're about to take that huge jump at the end of the movie where the car is flying and flying. Yeah. You'll see an exit to Washington Street, which is actually Waukegan.
All right. There you go. Thanks, Phil.
And I got family in Waukegan. Perfect.
There you go. And that is a big thing because the Blues Brothers, even calling out in that iconic scene where they're like, this is definitely Lower Wacker Drive.
Yeah.
They're very good with flying into the Daily Center. Daily Plaza, the knock on Ferris Bueller, and someone pointed it out as well in the text, is when Ferris is coming into the city, there's all sorts of wrong way driving montage to get in there. These go in the wrong way on Lakeshore. The ramp coming off of Lakeshore turns into Kennedy. There's so much there that Chicagoans drive Chicagoans crazy. I know, but it drives Chicagoans crazy, that kind of stuff, right?
Got to drive the right way on Lakeshore Drive.
Same as when Harry met Sally.
Right, that's right. That's right. That's what knocked that movie out, was probably going the wrong way on Lakeshore. Look, all right.
I was just going to say, a person that sees a movie with Chicago in it, it's like, what are the addresses? Did they get the addresses right?
Yeah.
And did they get the driving part right? Mm-hmm. There's so many TV shows that in the past have messed up locations in Chicago, like none of the addresses work. And true to form, a movie like The Blues Brothers or Ferris Bueller's Day Off, people are paying attention. Yeah. It's got their city in it. Greatest city in the world.
And the greatest city in the world has to have the greatest Chicago movie in the world. And looking at the numbers tonight and hearing the callers that called in as well as the text, it seems that after a month and a half of going through 64 films,
I won something.
The best Chicago film of all time, The Blues Brothers.
Oh!
Yeah, give it up. There
Bend
it is.
Bend over, let me see you.
I have a confession to make now. I have a confession to make. It's one of my favorite movies of all time.
Of course it is.
I was going to ask, the last question I'd ask you guys is that at the end of the day, you're comfortable with the idea that if someone said to you, favorite team, favorite restaurant, favorite Chicago movie, best Chicago movie, it would be Blues Brothers.
Without question.
Without question at all.
The day you asked me, it took me 10 seconds to reply to you.
I know, right?
I immediately went, The Blues Brothers. Cooley High might be my favorite movie for different reasons, but it's The Blues Brothers.
It's The Blues Brothers.
I think it has Chicago under its fingernails. It's just one of those movies that just, you know, you just feel it. You feel it when you're watching. And we would take people on that tour, the Blues Brothers tour that we had temporarily, and the magic in their eyes when they would see these iconic things. It's just
like the pawn shop on 47th.
Yes, sir. Exactly.
Yes, sir.
It's intact. It's there.
It's
you can
there.
See the people dancing on the street.
Just went past it yesterday.
There you go.
There you go. And that's always a mark of a good Chicago movie when you can go past the pawn shop from Blues Brothers. Right?
Hey, man, that. Go get some fish. 95th Street Bridge by Jeffrey Manor.
The risk that was taken to bring Blues Brothers to this city and the way they gave them the key of the city to do what they wanted, it exploded Chicago filmmaking. Jane Byrne's decision to bring Blues Brothers was worth $1 billion to this city.
Not to mention the cocaine budget. The dancing in that church, I am pretty certain John Belushi was high.
He saw the light.
Right.
Did glow.
Yeah, he saw the light. Do you see
that light? They had a whole suitcase full of sunglasses because he would just give them away to anybody.
Really? Now, see, that's something I didn't know. I know that we've talked about the fact that one of the things in the movie, one of the more noticeable things is that they never take their glasses off except for one time. And he's the only one that does it. Elwood never took his glasses off. But Belushi taking his glasses off might have been that moment of clarity for him where he was like, see, I'm good. I'm okay. And right back to Cocaineville.
Just those great eyebrows.
He's the man.
this moment right now, it's the end of the big championship. And the Blues Brothers and Ferris Bueller get to shake hands because Ferris Bueller obviously has a lot of fanfare here. Patrick McDonald, who's the Uber critic, who writes for HollywoodReporter.com and
Hollywood Chicago.
HollywoodChicago.com, sorry about that. And also has been a chief critic for years over at the, or chief tour guide for the Chicago Film Tour. Where can people find out information about that?
ChicagoFilmTour.com. We're doing private tours over in the winter, and the weather's been great.
Well, I love that. And Mario, who hosts his show on Thursdays on Lumpin' Radio.
Been a long day.
News and Service Entrance. Thanks for coming in today.
Anytime, man.
And where can we find you? What's the best place to find you, online or at the Promontory?
What I didn't tell you is I am now the maitre d' at the Promontory.
All right. That's
awesome.
Or
as I was told by the owner, the maitre dude. So come see me at the Promontory.
In Hyde Park?
In Hyde Park, Monday, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays. And so much stuff with the city that we're working on. A lot of cool stuff. You'll be hearing about it.
Awesome.
No doubt.
You got a lot of jobs, brother.
Hey, man. I'm not even Jamaican, and I got a lot of jobs. Thank you,
Mario,
really,
and Patrick.
This. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. And thank you for listening and for the texts and the calls and for everyone who participated and contributed to the ultimate Chicago movie cage match. We did it. We got to the best Chicago movie of all time. And it is Jake and Elwood, John Landis's The Blues Brothers, which won pretty much in a landslide. Like I said, kind of a 49ers Chargers vibe Super Bowl here tonight. Here
on the show. Now,
God is over.
It is. All right, more to come here tonight here on 720 WGN. We got lots to talk about. We're going to do it right after Vic's news here on 720 WGN. So stay with us. It's Justin Kaufman. I'm with you till 11 o'clock, and we've got lots to do. So let's get to it right after Vic Vaughn's news here on 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman back here, 720 WGN, with you till 11 o'clock tonight, 312-981-7200. Whew, I'm winded. I'm guzzling water here after the championship round. What an amazing round. And just tallying all the texts and listening to, and taking all the calls. I'm exhausted, Pete. What a great experience, and I want to thank you all for partaking and participating and contributing in what we our first ever Ultimate Chicago Movie Cage Match, and we took 64 films and went down to the winner. So now you can say unequivocally the best Chicago movie of all time is The Blues Brothers. And you spoke to say it was not close. I thought at the beginning, because of the votes that came in on Instagram this afternoon, that we would have much more of a show. But you heard the callers, you heard the texters. Blues Brothers is a favorite, and it proved tonight why it is the best Chicago film of all time. So many great things we talked about on, for both films, but it's almost like a DVD commentary reel the last couple months of these films. I learned so much. I found myself at least three times in the last, around Christmas time, doing that thing at a party or with family or friends, being like, the interesting thing about Ferris Bueller is that when they shot that, like, I had any idea before we started this, and it's all because of the great panelists and the texters. I know someone who was on the slide at the Wakanda beach. Like, I don't know them. It's a family member of a texter. I feel like I know them because I know you guys from listening and interacting. Yeah, but amazing. And they're not wrong, and Chicago's not wrong. They voted, and I think it was a pretty good cross-section. Blues Brothers wins. Now we move on to music. Starting right now. No. I don't even know where to start on that. I think what I learned about doing that segment is that it took way too long. Like, it was just like talking about movie after movie after movie, and it was great. Again, I learned a ton, and I know that people tell me they enjoyed it thoroughly. But I think if we do Chicago music, which is an undertaking, because think of all the unbelievable musicians that have come from Chicago. You're like, oh, the band Chicago, Cheap Trick, the Rockford, but they count, Smashing Pumpkins. Yeah. But what about Ramsey Lewis? And what about Muddy Waters? Start to get into, there's going to be some weird ones, but they're like, tonight it's Muddy Waters versus Material Issue. You're like, well, that's going to be the best, right? So I got to figure out a new format. If you have any suggestions on the format, let me know. 312-981-7200. Pete and I are going to have to do a weekend retreat, quarantine ourselves from the coronavirus, and work on this Best Chicago Movie Challenge, which will be coming up this spring. Why don't we give us a deadline, right? Like give us a month, figure it out. Or Monday. We'll just see what the schedule looks like. You're like, it is Chaka Khan versus Veruca Salt. You're like, all right. That could be good. Yeah, but that's it's going to be amazing. That'll be so much fun. 630 is already in. Jim Peterick, first one out. We haven't started yet. Jim would be on there. He'll be on there for sure. But maybe we get like Jim to come in and advocate for himself. Wouldn't it be great if you had Jim Peterick and Ramsey Lewis and they and advocated for why they should move on? And that'd be amazing. Now we're talking. 312-981-7200. Coming up a little bit later in the show, maybe we can do this coming up here, is just about the onslaught, a new study at the onslaught of rudeness. We have lost the ability to be civil. And you know where we've lost the ability to be civil? First, you think, what, the roadways? No. What, public transportation, restaurants? No. The workplace. We used to have a little bit of decorum and try to keep ourselves in check, wear collared shirts to work, try our best not to offend people. But according to a new study, we're not doing a good job of it. Most people who work in an office environment give a 10 out of 10 reporting rudeness from their coworkers. We'll talk about that. I've got stories about that. I'm sure you do too. We did anniversaries last night. We talked about how it was the 11th anniversary of Rob Blagojevich being removed from office. And also the one-year anniversary of Jussie Smollett, which I'm already sick of talking about. Just said his name once, and I'm like, ugh. But today is the one-year anniversary of the polar vortex from last January, where we saw temperatures plummet to the negative 20s. With the wind chill, it felt like it was negative 50 some places. Remember that? That was a year ago. That blows my mind to think about. Because I remember broadcasting, we were on the morning show, and it was a lot of worry about whether our cars would start or our garage doors would open or our tires would blow up. Remember we did a whole segment with Lou Manfredini about our tires? It was last year's coronavirus. It really was, like the polar vortex for a week. Everyone was doing dripping water. Opening their cabinets, making sure their pipes were exposed. What a heck of a time, and to think that was just last year. But this year, we've kind of rivaled it. We've had 8 straight days without sun. It has been overcast for 8 straight days. We're breaking records. Not sure what records we're breaking, but I keep hearing historic. Not to mention there's been one peak of the sun. In 2020, the whole month of January, there's just like one little moment where the sun came out. So which would you rather have? Would you rather have no sun for a whole month of January or a couple of days of sunny below zero temperatures? 312-981-7200. Let's talk about that. I personally, probably the overcast. I hate the cold. I'm not a cold guy. My wife is always like, oh, what do you care? You live in Chicago. I think Mindy Siegel, when she came in here not too long ago, chef, she said something, and I just said, oh, it's because of the cold. And she's like, what city do you live in? She snapped at me, which is par the course. You don't know where you live? You live in the Midwest. I'm definitely going to be the guy who is going to have a microphone set up in his bedroom in Cave Creek, Arizona, doing my show from Cave Creek in the winters. I don't like the cold. But what do you like? Tell me. I want to know. 312-981-7200. Would you rather? That's a game we're playing in weather. Would you rather have a couple of days of negative degrees but bright and sunny? Or would you rather have a couple of days that are overcast with no sun and mild, 30, 35 degrees? That's the question. 312-981-7200. Let me know. We'll take a break. Stay with us.
Gavin McKenzie, CEO, Build McKenzie.
I believe great companies are built by good people. So with more projects coming in and business continuing to grow, we posted a job on LinkedIn to quickly find a lead recruiter. We wanted to find someone who had 5 years of HR experience and was bilingual. And it was a bonus if they were endorsed on LinkedIn for their recruiting skills. Before we knew it, Anna Maria was at the top of our applicant list.
It's not easy finding the right person for your small business. LinkedIn Jobs screens candidates with the hard and soft skills you're looking for, so you can hire the right person fast.
Anna Maria came in for an interview, and she already had great ideas about a new hiring strategy. That's when I knew she was the best person to help grow my business.
A person is hired with LinkedIn every 8 seconds. Post a job at linkedin.com/work and get $50 off your first job post. That's linkedin.com/work for $50 off. Terms and conditions apply.
Attention investors, we all know the market can't rise forever. Want to mitigate risk? Want to take some cash off the table and diversify? National Realty's Class A Buildings Fund is prime income producing real estate. You're secured on large apartment buildings. You're backed by $750 million of quality new construction. You receive monthly electronic payments. You're diversified with 15 buildings supporting you. Your investment is managed for retirement. These prime building locations back you with hard money making assets. Remember, no matter what type of market, it's always a landlord's market. Call now for free information on real estate secured investment wealth. Call now and learn our insider method, obtaining 18 to 21% targeted returns. Our 13-year track record and $1.2 billion of assets under management proves it. Call 201-210-2727. That's 201-210-2727. An offer to buy or sell any security is only made by our private placement memorandum. Read it first and invest wisely. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. National is a real estate development firm. See us at NRIA.com.
Catch Living Healthy Chicago this Saturday at 10 a.m. Learn about the struggles and successes of everyday Chicagoans with health and fitness. Living Healthy Saturday at 10 a.m. on WGN TV. It's 720 WGN Radio. Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. The question at hand that people are texting in and calling about, I'm going to get to everybody's calls in just one moment. The question to refresh, would you rather have the weather we have today, which is overcast and gray, record setting where you don't see the sun for weeks on end, but it's 30, 35 degrees? Or would you rather have what we had last year? Sunny, bright, shiny, but negative temperatures. Let's go to Lori. Lori, which one do you like? You like the gray or you like the cold?
We're going gray.
Yeah, right?
All day.
All day, right?
See, there's a ceiling. That is why we don't have that sunny, blue skies. It's keeping the warmth in. My God, this is wonderful. I see kids walking up the road to catch the bus in shorts. Oh, my God.
I got to put some pants on. It's still 30 degrees. Put some pants on.
I know. I want to. But, you know, even like last year, I have to tell you, I did go to work both those days. And where I work in Lake Zurich, they gave the option to say, oh, you know, if it's too cold and, you don't have to take PTO or whatever. I went to work, and the best part of that was nobody was on the road.
Nobody was around.
It rammed. So, yeah, let's keep the ceiling with the gray.
I like that. Thanks, Lori. That's a great start. She's right. I don't know if Liz agrees. Liz, what do you think? Gray?
Yeah, done, Liz.
Gray or sunny?
I like sunny. I've gone skiing in that, so I have a lot of cold weather gear. Mm-hmm. So I would rather have a few days of sun, even if it's below zero, than all this gray skies for a week and 2 weeks.
It's depressing to have the gray skies. It's really hard to.
And it's making me sleepy.
Yeah, good point. I didn't even think about that. All right. Thanks, Liz. Thank you for that. Oh, this is good. Bob, what do you like? Do you like sunny or you like overcast?
I like overcast because I hate the cold like you.
Yeah, exactly, right?
Exactly. I mean, I'll take a month of cloudy.
You go a month. I don't know about a month. I wonder if we don't just, we're kind of like a lobster in a boiling pot, that we don't recognize that our temperament is getting sour, that we're getting nasty to each other, and we're not paying attention because it's gray, but we just don't recognize.
Well, I'm a retired policeman, and I work midnights, and it was cold out there.
Yeah.
I would take this anytime.
Anytime. Thanks, Bob. That's a good point. Oh. And remember that, Pete? We had to get up. To be in the morning show, you had to be in this building by 4:30 in the morning. And so it was the coldest moment. No thanks. Let's go with Phil. Phil, you like it cold and sunny or warm and gray?
The clouds keep it warmer, too. And I like the clouds. It reduces glare. I enjoy and I get depressed if it's too sunny too often.
You're the exact opposite.
I haven't heard anybody else really have that, but don't like sunny days. I way prefer the warmer weather. And one of the most depressing days in our country's history was 9/11, 2001.
Sure.
And that was the least cloudy day in recorded history of the United States, taken as a whole.
Wow, that's a strange fact to know. Right?
In the sky, yeah. And it was super depressing.
Do you get depressed at all when it's sunny in the summertime? Or is it just the winter depressed?
Oh, yeah, in the summertime, especially with the heat.
All right.
I just don't like, and of course, sun burns you too. So, you kind of have to stay out of it if you've got fair skin.
All right, thanks, Phil. Good stuff. He's like the contrarian of the bunch. He's a Mr. Opposite. Let's go to Dale. Dale, you like it cold and sunny? Or cloudy and warmer?
Oh, no, Justin, I like it better cloudy. Last year, when it was so cold like this, we've got a koi pond that's right off of our back deck.
Oh, no.
And we lost like 15 fish.
Man, I'm so sorry to hear that. That's terrible.
Yeah, it's really hard like that. I mean, it happened to a lot of people because it was just that bitter, bitter cold
I don't know why anyone would want... my wife is like this. She's like, oh, I like the cold. It's like refreshing. I'm like, no, it's not. It's terrible. Well, who likes the cold?
Yeah, I don't mind a little bit of chill and stuff, but when it's cold like that, I mean, I went to school in South Dakota and Minnesota, and I'm well acquainted with, you know, like 20 below wind chills, and I don't mind the clouds. I'll take the clouds any day. Thanks, Justin.
Thanks, Dale. Yeah. I remember the one thing that killed me last year was, you know, there was all the talk about keeping your house warm and all the things, and you had to open the cabinets and do everything. And it wasn't until the spring, and I heard this from a lot of people, it wasn't until the spring when I turned my hose or turned the water back on and had my external hose that went out that it was busted. Like, it froze, and when it unfroze, that's what the plumber told us, it busted. So, it's kind of like we were talking about with the violence numbers. It trickled in 4 months later. Add my frozen pipes to the number of frozen pipes from the polar vortex. I just didn't know about it until 5 months later. And then, in classic Justin form, it was right by the door. You know, it's where because the hose connects to I don't have a yard. I have, like, a foyer. About the size of a foyer. And in classic Justin form, they had to, you know, saw out the space of the drywall to get to the pipe. And I just put a nice little taped, sheet on it and left it there until it was fixed right before Christmas. So what is that? From March to Christmas, there was like 8 months of just a little bit of plastic on my wall. For a while there, you didn't even see it. My wife kept complaining about it. I'm like, what? It's neat. But I got it fixed. And you know what I did? I had installed a door that you can open, like a little plumber's door. And you open it. And so they say when it's cold, like that it was last year, negative 20, you open that door and it gets the warmth of the house into the pipes in there. Because the way our townhome was designed, the front of it is exposed to the cold. So anyway, there you go. It's very Lou Manfredini right there. You're like, oh my gosh, am I listening to Mr. Fix-It? Is he on at nights now? Nope. Fooled you, it's Justin. All right, let's go to the text. I got tons of texts here. Okay, so the question, which is a great question tonight. Would you rather have gray, historic gray days, 8 or 9 of them in a row, maybe even a month at this point, where the sun rarely peaks out, but it's 30, 35 degrees because the clouds are creating a ceiling and keeping the warm? Would you rather have that or what we had last year, which is an excessive 2 or 3 days of super bitter cold, but bright sunshine all month? So the temperatures are going to be averaged out under 20, maybe 10 degrees. In the worst case scenario, negative 20. But the sun is out and shining all January. Which would you rather have? 312-981-7200. 224 says, I'd rather have the cloudy days instead of the cold. Tom from Elgin. 847 says, I absolutely love the cloudy overcast days. I have way more energy on cloudy days. Too much sun puts me in a bad mood. What? Is this a new thing? Because wasn't it Tom said the same thing, right? Or no, it wasn't Tom. It was Gale? Dale. Here we go. I'd rather see 847 says, rather see sun with 25 degrees, not much colder than 40, and dreary mild weather. The sun can feel warmer. Yeah, that's what I hear from a lot of people. Let's keep going here. 815 says, give me the sun. We can make it through a cold snap. Besides, we need the frigid temps to kill off some of the bugs, like the emerald Asper beetle. Yeah, that's a good point. I guess I'll take that. 847 says they'd rather have the polar vortex. They canceled work. They don't cancel work for gray clouds. That's so true. 815 says I'll totally go with the gray. It doesn't take my breath away when I walk outside. Yeah, that phenomenon was the worst. Oh. 708 says I'll take the overcast and warm. 815, take this over last year. Last year was terrible. 630, sun, sun, sun. It brightens your whole outlook. Who are you people? I know, there's a lot of contrasts here. I do like it. Dale and also the texter saying sun depresses them, or sun drains them of energy. 630 says, cloudy, just take some vitamin D. All right, there you go. Cloudy days put everything in soft focus. Ooh, that must be a photographer or someone who puts filters on their Instagram posts. 708, I'll take 20 and sun, but if it's the polar vortex, then I'll take this, the overcast and 35. Agreed. But the 20 and sun, the deal with the 20 and sun is that you got to have one day where it dips to zero or below. That's the deal. 847 says, I'll take 20s with clear skies and fresh air. 30s, it's too damp. Too damp. We don't use the word damp enough. Hey, how's it going? It's good. How do you like this weather? Nah, it's too damp. 412, too much sun. You people better get on your meds. I don't know if they mean too much sun. I think let me read the sarcasm. I misread the tone of that text. Too much sun? Get off your meds, people. As opposed to, too much sun is bad for you, or whatever. I think I was reading it the way I was reading it. 773 says, the warm weather isn't helping my backyard ice rink. Yeah. That's a good point. I feel for you, 773. Now it's just water, damp grass. I like the backyard ice rink. I have a friend who, I haven't seen it, and I have never gone over there, but I have a friend on who I used to, former coworker, who she always sets up an ice rink with her family in the backyard. It just looks like so much fun. And yeah, they're probably, this is a disaster area. Now it's just wet. It's just wet backyard. It's no good. 224 says damp. 219 clouds. The sun gives me a headache. Too high of a barometric pressure. Wow. You pay attention to the barometric pressure. Whenever I hear any of our news guys talking about the barometric pressure, I'm like, who uses that information? Well, 219 does. Helps with the headaches. 312, since I work in an office for 8 hours, I'll take these overcast days. Now no one gets any sun. And all these no sun people that listen, they must be vampires. Could be. We could be very popular with the vampire crowd. They like talk radio because they're up at night, right? All right, 630. Animals died in the polar vortex, especially dogs that were tied outside. So no way. Staying with the cloudy. Yeah, I guess we should preface. No deaths. You're absolutely right. It got very dangerous. And I'd rather see the sun with 25 degrees, not much colder than 40, and dreary mild weather. The sun can feel warmer. So many great things here. 708 says damp is better than moist. I got a nice picture of from 773 of the ice rink. It's a beautiful ice rink. Wow. They've got lights lined up around it. It looks kind of official. I thought it was just kind of like stakes, a little bit of, you know, wiring around the end, and then freeze the grass. That's nice. I'll take sun over the warmth, damp over moist. I really got people going on damp now. Just want to hear me say damp. And lots of trouble last year. Nobody wants that. All right, good stuff. All right, let's talk about rude workplaces. There's a new study out that says we're just getting ruder. Rudeness is becoming contagious. And I have to say that it used to be just, you know, in restaurants or service situations or possibly how we deal with each other in transportation. But this study says it is now rearing its head in the office. 312-981-7200. If you got stories, if you believe, if you're on the front lines, sitting in your office every day, 9 to 5, and you can tell me unequivocally that that is the case, that everyone is just becoming ruder, I need you. 312-981-7200. Let's do our own study. Stay with us. 312-981-7200. Still getting some texts on the weather. My favorite one, 773, says, I missed the polar vortex. My neighbors and I went out back in the alley and we had a great time. That's a weird definition of a great time. I remember going in the back alley and going, 1, 2, 3, 4. All right, I'm going back inside. I like it, though. So 8470 says, vampire here, listening. Good. I'm a favorite of the vampire community. That's good. And my 708 says, I love cold, sunny days. It makes me feel alive. Yeah. Well, I'll take the gray days. Makes me feel half dead. But I'll take it because it's warm. All right, let's talk about the this rudeness story. Forget about the coronavirus. According to a new study, you know what's more contagious? Rudeness. And forget about it in the workplace. Past surveys suggest virtually all workers experience rude or uncivil behavior. Well, over half report being treated badly at least once a week. Wow. We're lucky, Pete. Pete and I share an office here. I mean, we're rude to each other. Maybe we just don't know. It's just the way we talk. But in the media business, rudeness is a badge of honor. I can't tell you how many newsrooms where people are running in saying something short and, we need a tape now! Oh, okay, fine. Gosh, geez, slow down. But there's a question. Is there a rise of rudeness? Have you noticed at your office or your workplace that the civility that the rules used to apply and all the people abided by, is it kind of going out the window? Is there a rise in rudeness? That's our topic for this half hour. 312-981-7200. Let's go to Jane. Jane, what do you think? Are you noticing your office being ruder?
Well, I'm actually a career counselor. So I kind of have an interesting point and a view on all this. And I also work with a lot of people who, in some of my clients' offices. So
yeah.
What I see is a whole bunch of people who have not taken vacations for years on end, who have been working 60-hour weeks, you know, who are doing 1.5, 2.5, 3.5 people's jobs that just are so burnt out that they can't even remember how to be polite.
Hmm. Where does that end up? From your experience, do you see that being the last thing to go, the first thing to go? At what point does politeness and rudeness sort of fall apart in a civil office space?
I see it about mid-range. Hmm. And I see people telling stories of nitpicking over very little things and getting really angry at people over very little things because it's a classic sign of burnout. So at the total burnout stage, they start getting really sick.
Hmm. Like they get sick and they start calling in sick and that adds more pressure as well to the whole work experience. Yeah.
Because, you know, we are making people work in our country as a whole, are making people work many more hours for much less pay.
Yeah. It's interesting. Thanks for the call, Jane. I appreciate it. And you're right. You're absolutely right. They don't mention that at all in the study about burnout and stress. And I wonder, that has to play a huge role. Because I've worked with a lot of journalists. When I worked in a shop where we would be underpaid and overworked, and you'd find yourself late night doing edits and trying to get your stories out, and then the next day back at it, and all you really had to feel good about your job was the fact that, you know, you had a great, you had great output. You did a great story that aired on the radio and people liked it and it was good to go. But you would see after a while that, and I totally agree with Jane, that's exactly what it was, is that that cycle would cause burnout. That cycle would cause stress. And one of the first things to go was being nice. Good morning. Understanding, empathy, putting yourself in someone else's shoes, going the extra mile to help people in the office. All that kind of stuff goes away when you're stressed and you're burnt out. As far as the rudeness, 708 says, it's not Republican, it's not Democrat, but the President of the United States is kind of setting a tone, isn't he? Maybe there's something to that. He has a brash style, you'd say. Kind of goes at it. He doesn't necessarily start with the pleasantries. He's not one for understanding the other side. So maybe that is. Maybe that's part of it, as we look at our leaders, not just the president, but people in sports and celebrity, things of that nature, that perhaps their style sets the tone, the agenda for everybody else and how they can act. 224 says, I'm a nurse, 25 years plus. That's awesome. People still are pretty nice face-to-face, but can get nasty with email at work. And patients I care for are generally more demanding and rude. That's a great point. I wonder how much the digital age is affecting the outcome of this study. I remember having a coworker who was the nicest person. She was the nicest person in when we were face-to-face. Hello, how are you? She might get you a coffee. She was always interested. And it just was a nice working environment. Was a total ass when she would send emails. You're just like, I don't understand. Am I getting yelled at? I felt like three or four times I had to actually write back an email. That sounds great. Thanks a lot. Hey, on a separate note, maybe not as many exclamation points, or I don't know if all caps is needed in this situation, or if you could you please end your sentence with punctuation? That would be like that kind of stuff. The little things that you don't even think about. I am a big fan of the exclamation point. I do it all the time. All my emails, I like to say, great, I'm excited. This is going to be booking for the show. Great, I'll see you then. And I never think about how that kind of comes across. And I always wonder in the case of this person that that's probably the same thing. She is thinking she is as nice as she is down in communication on the floor, but when we get to email, she's not. And you make a great point. Most workplaces, offices, other places, they're going to be front-facing to customers. And man, that's when it breaks down, especially when customers just believe that they are if in a service industry. No, it's nuts. People just forget how to be civil in general. 773 says, if you want to see the rudest people in the world, in the workplace, do a study of retail workers. Billy in Portage Park. Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Is this rude? Let me ask, this should be the segment. Is this rude? I am pretty short at retail places. Like, I'm curt. And I don't know if it's because I'm trying to cut off the inevitable sales pitch. So I quickly kind of am short and curt in a way that just sort of sets the tone for our relationship. And maybe that comes across rude. Because I'm thinking like at the Gap. If you're at the Gap and you roll and you're just kind of browsing, and a lot of times I'm in there because my wife is exchanging something or is there, and I'm just in a position where I'm just kind of browsing. And there'll be kind of a stalker salesman who kind of comes around and asks me if I need anything and I usually will be like, no, I'm good, man. Don't even start on the pitch. I'm good to go. That's got to be rude. I realize that probably comes across rude. I'm trying to set the tone because I feel, not unlike what Billy's talking about, that the tables will turn. And they'll be talking about, they'll be rude or they'll be obnoxious in trying to get me to buy something in the store. But I will, as I think about it, I'm like, that probably comes across rude. They don't need me to be curt like that. 563 says, I have a theory that small offices with 6 to 10 people tend to be more annoying than large cubicle areas. The rude people overwhelm the normals in a small office.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's almost, that's part of the rudeness, right? That they just kind of over, they're overbearing. Absolutely. 815 says, Justin, yes, that's rude. I shouldn't have opened up about my rudeness. But see, I'm open to it. 815, right? I'm willing to be converted. It's not as bad as I don't think I articulated it. Pete, jump on the microphone real quick. All right, I'm going to do a role play. Okay, so Pete Zimmerman, ladies and gentlemen. He's a Juilliard-trained actor. He's been vetted for this purpose. All right, so you be the salesman, and I will do what I do at the. So I'm looking at the sales rack.
Yeah,
and I'm just kind of looking at stuff. Okay, here I'm just browsing.
I'm familiar with this as a Foot Locker employee. I would have to approach something, so I'm going to pretend like I'm a Foot Locker guy, and I see you looking at the wall of shoes.
Okay, I'm looking at shoes. I'm looking at the shoes. These are nice shoes, man. These are Nike.
Hey, man, what's going on?
Not much, man. I'm just looking at stuff.
Looking at anything?
Not at all, man. Just kind of browsing. My wife's over there, so thanks a lot.
All right, well, let me know if you need any help.
Will do.
Okay. That's rude.
That was rude on my part?
A little bit too short.
Oh, come on. I thought that was that was proof of how I wasn't being rude. And you know, because you're a former Foot Locker guy. I try to be upfront. I almost give too much information. I don't know, man. I don't know. I don't buy it. I'm willing to role play with anybody, by the way. Call up and you have any acting chops and you want to try it out. Yeah. I'm also, I don't know, maybe I get it from a long line of Kaufmans who enjoy the subtle art of being annoyed by retail. A lot of deep huffs. I'm a huffer. So if I get up to the counter at Old Navy and it said it was 2 for $7, 2 for $10, right? And then I go in there and they say it rings up as 12. And I say, no, that's supposed to be 2 for $10. And they go, oh, it says 12. I go, I'm a huffer. This place, a lot of under the breath. I knew this place. I knew it. That's me. All right, Dave, what do you think about rudeness in the workplace?
You know, I don't take it personally because a lot of retail workers are not really making more than minimum wage.
Right.
And, you know, I think that, you know, when I was, you know, a young adult, a teenager working retail jobs, I'm going back 40 years, and I think a lot of them are just, you know, they're just pressed to the limit. I mean, they hire as few workers as possible.
Right.
Many of them are in constant motion. They don't get a rest, and that's just not how it was when I was working those kinds of jobs.
You're so right, Dave.
You got to give them some slack.
You're absolutely right. I got to give them slack.
Some of them go out of their way to be friendly, and they want to be helpful, and, you know, it's always nice. But, you know, they don't have much of a bond with the places they work for anymore because they're all huge commercial franchises. I mean, when I was a teenager up in Highland Park, I worked for the Fell Company. That was like an ages-old family-run store, and everyone there felt like they were part of the family, you know?
Yeah.
It's not that way anymore.
It's not. Thanks, Dave. No, Dave's right. Dave echoes the same sentiment as earlier, just this idea that maybe it really has more to do, especially when we're talking about the workplace rudeness, that we are not paying attention to how overstressed and burnt out our fellow coworkers are. But in this case, we've kind of turned the conversation to the retailer-customer relationship, which is, it goes the same way. The person working retail is probably, like you just said, could be overworked, underpaid, has no association or attachment to the brand or the retail establishment itself. The customer has an entitled vibe to them. They want to. They know what they want. They don't want to be screwed over by this said corporation. They've been screwed over before. It's probably a pretty volatile combination coming together. Got a lot of texts coming in, people on the line as well. 312-981-7200. And we making it up? Or is your workplace getting more rude? Is it more rude or ruder? Probably more rude, right? Yeah. Well, we'll find it. That could be a separate, that could be a sub-call. 312-981-7200. Grammar with Justin. Stay with us. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. 773 says, my teenage daughter worked at a restaurant. Would often come home telling me about rudest customers. People would get angry about things that which she had no control, such as the fact that they weren't playing the Cubs game on the televisions. I could see that. Although, I'm a Cubs fan. There is a level of anxiety. I'm never rude to the people, but there's a level of anxiety when, you know, your Bears game's about to start. Something's about to start, and it's not on the TV, and they've got, like, and a lacrosse on. She'll show in the end of that secondary tennis match. Like, my favorite was one time I was, this is 96, probably 1996, and it was the Bulls' run to the championship with Jordan and the amazing year where they were 72-10 or whatever it was. And I remember living above a German bar in Lincoln Square called the Hansa Klippa. And I would kind of go in there once in a while and watch games. And I think maybe the game was on cable, so I was like, well, I'd go down there and watch the game. And it's a big deal. Chicago's, you know, we talk about May and Bulls basketball, playoffs, the greatest. We get down there, and it's a Cubs game, like a nighttime Cubs game in, you know, May or whatever, June. And it wasn't particularly a good Cubs team. And you know, it's getting closer to the time. And I remember saying to the bartender, I was like, hi, are you going to the Bulls game? And she's like, not here, honey. Not here. It's like, what do you mean? It's like a NBA championship. Like, what do you mean? Why are we watching this? And they're like, we don't care. And we're not catering to you. And it's like, you're the best. So I stay there and watch the Cubs. Cubs lost that game. It was a real good game. All right. 708 says, we were thankful to have jobs as teens. In recent year, I was out of work for a time and was willing to take any job. I'm not sure what the point is, but worked in the restaurant hospitality industry for 20 years. Employees are worked crazy hours, nights, weekends, holidays, etc. On their feet constantly. Don't get standard breaks. They're expected to put a happy face to people. I just don't understand it. I left for work this morning at 4:30. I'm just getting home now. Still had to put in a happy face if someone complained about anything. Also, cloudy and warm. 847. This conversation is really about the workplace and the office space and how rudeness and civility are kind of going in different directions. But it's interesting to see how it has morphed to a lot of people working in the service industry and dealing with A, nasty customers and employers that seem to be pushing them to the limits. Which is a great topic. It's I think very indicative of the two topics kind of side by side. If you think about it, everything we're talking about of really stretching the limits and pushing people to the brink or having people do three jobs instead of one, all that kind of stuff would lead, it's pretty plain and obvious, would lead to rudeness. I think that's it. 773 says, I have to chime in on this one. As a city worker here, I work in a place where employees feel that their employment is protected and therefore they can say and do anything. Subordinates are spoken to rudely often. It's part of the culture in many departments, not for the thin-skinned. I wish it was better. That's a really good point. Culture is what secondarily you got to talk about when you talk about rudeness in the workplace. And that's media. Media has that problem. That I think in some cases, that's where you get people who the story, the end of the day, you kind of saw that in the movie Broadcast News. But everything is in service of the product. And if you get your feelings hurt in the process, that's your problem. And it's hard. You know, I remember seeing One of the hardest situations is when you're working on a project and you're working long hours and you're really putting things in and you put a lot of passion into it, and that project might be scrapped. Boss comes in and says, you know, we're moving you to something else. And I remember I had that happened to me, and I remember a coworker who was very, she got very rude after that. Like, just didn't feel like they were very, I don't know what the right word is, valued in a way. So I could see that happening. That's if the culture is off like that, where you can do anything, you're always going to have people who are going to be rude to their subordinates. 312-981-7200. I volunteered at a food pantry for 18 years, and people today, they just feel more entitled every year. Rude, tell you this food is free, give us more. The more they receive, the more they want. They steal each other's carts and buggies. Sometimes we wonder why we even try to help out, says Sue. Yeah. You help out because it's in you, and something that you want to do to help out, and you want to give back to society, and it's sad that you're in a situation where sometimes they don't recognize or have gratitude for what you're doing. But keep doing it, please. No one is more rude than the coworker who puts in their 2-week notice and then just acts like a fool. That's a thing. That's awesome. 847, I'm going to sound like an old man, but the younger generation just doesn't have the tolerance or grit to deal with a customer that's upset. They take it personally. It's just work. We're not doing brain surgery. Huh. Man, that might just also be a sign of the times. Stuff has changed. 708 said, my daughter works retail. How about a customer who comes in on Thanksgiving and says, they make you work on Thanksgiving? Yeah, they do. Thanks. All right. Good stuff. Well, I haven't noticed it as much here, I'll be honest with you. I work with Pete, and pretty much Pete, and he's just all the time rude, across the board. Everything he does. Like that role play with the Foot Locker stuff. Totally rude. He was the rude one. You didn't even notice it here, did you? You were like, Justin's so sympathetic of a character. That guy who works at Foot Locker, he's just rude. Was it supposed to go like this, Pete? Was it supposed to be me, if we were doing the role play again, I was just supposed to go, sure, I'll look at the shoes. Sure, I'll buy the shoes. And then I buy the shoes. That's pretty much it. Yeah, that's what I thought. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Justin Kaufman with you tonight till 11 o'clock. We got a great show coming up here in the 10 o'clock hour. Nick DiGilio coming up at 11 o'clock takes over here on 720 WGN. Coming up in just a minute, we're going to have Vic Vaughn's newscast, get you up to speed on all the stories that are happening. Coming up in the next hour for us, got some stuff we can talk about. We can talk about the great Chris Borelli piece that was about the cult pizza places in Chicago, whether or not your place made the list. Chris Borelli, great, one of the best writers at the Chicago Tribune. We'll talk about that. We can also talk about these new hats. I don't know if you saw the new designed hats of Cubs and Sox, where they both have a deep dish pizza logo and a Chicago flag on them. The Chicago flag, you're like, okay, that's fine. But they have a deep dish pizza logo. Like, that's Chicago. And it makes me think, I mean, it's kind of tied to the pizza story, but who would wear that? Who would make that? Someone who's not from Chicago. I don't care what anyone says. And I know, because I know the listeners well. We're not deep dish pizza people. That is for tourists that are coming in from downtown who read about it in an airport magazine, or airplane magazine. And the idea you would put that on the side of your Sox hat or your Cubs hat, it's kind of ridiculous. A little bit tone deaf. Talk about that coming up. And talk about Borelli's piece, and there's a bunch of other stuff we can do. I'd love to talk to you about it. Coming up here, 312-981-7200. Like I said, Vic Vaughn's news is next. Justin Kaufman with you here. So stay with us. 312-981-7200. Justin Kaufman with you here till 11 o'clock tonight. Vic just talked about that story. I wanted to talk about that story that was in the It was actually in the Washington Post, but it's about how the Atlantic dropped former mayor Rahm Emanuel as a contributing editor. Remember this story? Right after the mayor was done, he was going to go do media. So he's going to be a talking head on different places. And then they announced the Atlantic, which is a great magazine, East Coast magazine, said they made him a contributing editor. And there was a lot of head scratching in Chicago. Like, what? Why? Really? And his pieces were going to be pretty much about, bashing Republicans, getting back into the way when he was a congressman or leading the Democrats back in the 2000s. But this piece came out today, this afternoon. Essentially, the headline is, "The Atlantic made Rahm Emanuel a contributing editor, then suddenly he wasn't." The writer goes through the archive, and Rahm Emanuel wrote one or two pieces in the time that he was, since he left office in Chicago. It's not a lot. I mean, it's been a while now. Well, it turns out that's not an accident. A strongly worded letter happened. A group of black staffers at the Atlantic, they sent letters to the editor-in-chief, Jeffrey Goldberg, and other Atlantic leaders. The letter showed staffers' objections to hiring Rahm Emanuel. Well, why? They say they don't like the unique circumstances of Mr. Emanuel's conduct, and his hiring demands a response. They go out of their way to say this is no indictment of the organization's leadership. This is not partisan politically. We don't like the unique circumstances. This is the quote, "the unique circumstances of Mr. Emanuel's conduct, and his hiring demands a response." Well, it turns out those unique circumstances they're talking about relates to the mayor's handling of the murder of Laquan McDonald. They're essentially saying that they don't want the former mayor to be part of their organization because he's responsible for a cover-up when it comes to the tape that was not released to the public till much later, that we've now all seen, with the shooting of Laquan McDonald from now former police officer Jason Van Dyke. And this is I'm going to read this very dense paragraph. This is from the letter. I'm going to read this, okay? This is from the staffers who objected to Mayor Emanuel. "The proper bounds of free inquiry and racial justice are subjects of constant contention in a free society, and we do not hope to settle those questions here. What is plainly true is that Mr. Emanuel used the conditions of a financial settlement with a grieving family to cover up the details of murder of a black teenager by a white police officer. Mr. Emanuel's conduct defies both principles beyond recognition as the kind of behavior that news organizations of any ideological stripe expose rather than reward." Whoa. And so then the Atlantic is like, well, you know what? You kind of made a good point. And Emanuel's been 86. He's out. Tossed to the side of the road. Now, my question on this piece is, that's a lot of speculation. There's never been a charge against Mayor Emanuel for, quote unquote, covering up that tape. To this day, and people have said, and from the Chicago Tribune, John Cass, to others have said, of course he saw the tape first, but he says he didn't. Gary McCarthy on the mayoral trail made points to say all the stuff because he was fired by Emanuel. And we could sit here, you and I, and we could say, oh, of course he did. We're not dumb. We're not stupid. Of course he did. But to put into writing that you believe that the mayor of Chicago covered up this police shooting, essentially because he's racist, Is that the end game? What is for what? For political gain? Because it was an election year and he wanted to be reelected? Because he wanted to protect a police officer? What are we talking about here? Now, I've covered the story, big part of it. We all in Chicago had a big role in this, and I would say everything that has happened up to this point has been pretty above board when it comes to how people have been punished, including a police officer who got a second-degree murder charge and is now is continuing to serve out a prison term. But to go out of your way to suggest that the mayor of Chicago had nefarious reasons for the way that that story played out and use that in a highly strongly worded letter to get the guy fired from being a contributing editor, I don't know if I agree with that. You can go on talk shows and spew your opinions and say, there's no way he didn't see the tape, and you can get mad and you can scream and yell. But that letter doesn't do that. That letter in the paragraph that I just read to you, which was very Atlantic, by the way, a lot of big words in there, essentially is acting as if it's fact. That the mayor covered it up, and everybody knows that, and he didn't want to expose this police officer, and he hid behind a settlement, and this is the kind of stuff we should be penalizing people for, not rewarding it for. And there's some big names on this list. Greg Easterbrook's on this list. Ibram X. Kendi, who was on this program, is on this list. It says Chuck Todd. I'm not sure if that's the same Chuck Todd. But these are the people who are on the masthead. So I guess these weren't the people who actually... No, let me take that back. These are not the people who... These were the other former contributing editors. These were not the staffers. But this is where Rahm Emanuel's name used to be, and it's not there anymore. In a statement to the Washington Post, the editor Goldberg said, last spring, several of our colleagues came up with these concerns about his appointment. We met, discussed their concerns, and I thought that a number of their arguments were persuasive. This conversation quickly led to a broader discussion about the confusing masthead category of contributing editor. In September, we replaced the title across the board with contributing writer. That's garbage. This is all about semantics. He goes on to say, I'm glad that from the outset our colleagues recognize that the Atlantic is meant to be a big tent for ideas and opinion, and that the issue was not whether Rahm Emanuel or other former or current elected officials should have their work considered for publication, but whether they should be granted titles on the masthead. Emanuel remains free to pitch us ideas for publication like any non-staff contributor. What? So essentially, this story boils down to the idea that the people were mad that Rahm Emanuel was on the masthead for contributing editor for The Atlantic. It seems like a lot of hot air. I don't know. I usually would stand with people making journalistic hay out of ethical concerns. I'm just not sure that that's the case here. There's a lot of reasons to hate Rahm Emanuel, and he is hated in many circles. But this just seems to be, I don't want to act like I'm, you know, of a boomer generation that needs to say woke culture gone run amok. But I'm a little concerned because I'm not sure that any of the stuff that they threw out in that letter about the mayor is true, factual, and not just of a opinion. And for them to present it with no we think or allegedly or reportedly or anything like that. These are journalists themselves. I think Emanuel is probably sitting there right now, hot under the collar, thinking about what he's going to do next. I wonder if this story is going to have legs. Vic just had it in the newscast. It just broke today. It was this afternoon. I wonder if this will be the topic tomorrow. And I wonder if Emanuel, it'll probably be the topic if Emanuel himself says something about it. And he might, because he likes to talk. No, let me finish. Let me finish. Every interview I had with the mayor, that's usually how it went. Let me finish. 312-981-7200. I'm interested in that story. We'll see how it plays out. All right, we'll take a break here. Come back. Let's talk about Chris Borelli's piece about the cult pizza. Do you have a cult pizza place? A place that you love, and no doubt you love, but at the same time, it's a cult pizza place. You go nowhere else. It's that pizza place or nowhere. I don't, but it sounds like you do. Borelli's piece labels 16 cult pizza places, and I'm sure you have yours. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Stay with us. Justin Kaufman with you here. 312-981-7200. Chris Borelli had a great piece in the paper. The paper. Listen to me. He had a great piece that I read on a computer. Today, about 16, this actually came out yesterday, 16 cult pizzas in Chicago that you don't know unless you're part of that cult. And we can go through the 16, and it's not really the point of the segment, but it made me think about, because he's essentially calling out pizza as cult. He said, cult pizza is family. Odd, he's such a great writer. Chris Borelli is a great writer. Here's what he says. Cult pizza is what I call Chicago pizza. It has a substantial following, yet always doesn't work its way to the best of lists. Inspire lines of tourists or rattle reflexively off tongues that brag about Chicago being the greatest pizza town in America. It's just our everyday pizza. It's your neighborhood pizza. It's a pizza you grab on the way home. The pizza you crawl into when 6 inches of snow cover the ground. And the pizza you return to decades after you've moved away somewhere. Its makers occupy Chicago storefronts that are closer to urban wallpaper. Everywhere and nowhere. Seen and not seen. Necessary to live here, yet taken for granted. Paradoxically rooted in our personal history, though somehow underrated. Cult pizza is family. Odd as it is to suggest a parallel world of local pizza consumption, operating in plain sight away from the fashionable, the trends, the food writers, the calcified mirage of a deep dish Chicago pizza mecca, that's exactly how I've come to see cult pizza, as a multiverse. Oh, wow. Dude went in. I like him. Chris Borelli. Chicago Tribune. Do you agree with him? I mean, Pete just had a caller call in and said, yeah. And he's talking about my area, McHenry County. And he's true. It's a little different because there's not a lot of pizza places out there. Well, there are. I mean, there's pizza places everywhere. But he mentioned the Foxhole in McHenry, which made me go, oh, yeah, I know that place. And he mentioned Dusty's Pizza in Wonder Lake. And the minute Dusty's Pizza was mentioned to me, I had a shot of adrenaline. It automatically took me to that side door, and it automatically took me to the paper wrap on the top of it, and automatically took me to the only pizza that we would eat growing up. Dusty's was a Friday night companion. We'd drive over there and get it, drive back. It was a great pizza. And that I would fall into the category of a Dusty's Pizza cult aficionado. So is that true? Are you the kind of person that does that? Are you a sampler? I think my wife is a sampler. It drives me crazy. She's all over the place. 7 or 8 different pizza places are in our realm. I always get frustrated because I just want to go to D'Agostino's. That's it. That's it. I'll go there every day. That'll be it. And instead it's, oh, what about this one? What about that kind? What about this kind? I don't like that. I would like to go back to the Dusty's pizza experience. Go to Wonder Lake, Illinois. So if you got a place, let us know. 312-981-7200. You don't have to, you know, this isn't a pizza segment where we're like, best pizza places in Chicago. There are great places in here, from Gage Park to Bill's up in, I guess he's in Vernon Hills. Just essentially going through all the great places. Yeah, Pizza Castle in Gage Park is what Borelli talks about. That are in Chicago that you call home more than, 3 or 4 times a month? 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Jimmy's Pizza on Lincoln and Foster, 773, says, my wife loves it. She's from Milwaukee, and I'm born and raised in Dunning on Tavern Style. Who isn't? I don't know why we can't stop eating this New York-style pizza, but they have us. Oh, this is Jimmy's is a New York-style. But I'll definitely cheat and get a small cheese from Marie's on Lawrence on the DL. Honey, what are you doing in there? Open. Eating this food? Yeah, that's great. I don't know Lincoln and Jimmy's Pizza at Lincoln and Foster. I know Lincoln and Foster. Lincoln and Foster is a great little area there. Because I used to live up in Ravenswood, so that's know that route pretty well. But as mentioned, you know, now in Chicago, I think if you live in the Southport area, D'Agostino's kind of fits the bill. There's one on Ogden that I go to all the time. My brother goes to it all the time. He swears by it. If you got a pizza place you swear by, let's talk about it. 312-981-7200. And why? Mary Sandberg, who is now our boss, but when we worked together on the morning show, she had a slew of great places on the essentially north suburbs. Bill's was one of them. There was another place she told me about. I can't remember, and I went, and it was awesome. But it was a great place because it was like a, I want to say it was in Northbrook or somewhere in that area, maybe Northfield. But essentially, it was just a storefront, and it was in a strip mall. Mostly carryout, but we sat in there, and it was like right next to the video poker machine. And it was great. I loved it. But those are the kind of places I'm talking about. If you're going to talk about your pizza place, it better have a video poker place in it. That's it, right? Although a texter told me that in Wonder Lake, across the street from Dusty's was the Old Mill restaurant. And it was right on the Nipersink. And that was the fancy, classy place. When I was growing up, that's where you put a collared shirt on if you wanted to go, you know, have dinner if grandma was in town. And she said that they changed that up. Now that's all video poker. Her video poker's in the lobby. So that's kind of taken over a lot of different places in Chicago or Illinois towns. 312-981-7200. If you got a pizza place, Borelli talks about six. He talks about 16 of these, which is pretty great. I'm sure yours is in here. So he talked about Pizza Castle in Gage Park. Bill's Pizza, it's in Mundelein. Sorry, I said Vernon Hills earlier. Mundelein, which is a double-decker. I like Bill's a lot because they got the peanut shells on the floor. But the best thing is that, and no one talked about it, they've got all the Little League photos from the teams that they sponsor all over the place from the 80s and the 90s or whatever, and every kid is in a Little League jersey, whether it's boys or girls. And then they also have a huge poster on their wall of the different fish that you can find in the Great Lakes. You're one of those, like, kind of like, this is a crappy. And this is what it looks like. And I was just like, that's so great. Love that, right? Who doesn't love that? I think they called our table like twice. I'm like, I haven't finished the fish yet. I'm learning about the fish that are in the Great Lakes. The Pizza Castle in Gage Park, Bill's, Palermo's of 63rd Street. He profiles all of these, which is great. Our House, which from Rachel Post, Our House. Lefty's Pizza Kitchen in Wilmette gets a shout out. Joe's Italian Villa in Palos Heights. Smack Dab in Rogers Park, one of Pete Zimmerman's faves. Bob's Pizza in Pilsen. Well, that looks good. Forno Rosso, which is in the West Loop. Barone's in Glen Ellen. Union Square in Evanston. Dante's Pizzeria in Logan Square. Barnaby's, which, by the way, Barnaby's was, and correct me if I'm wrong, but Barnaby's is the pizza place in Ferris Bueller. When the principal goes to the arcade and he goes behind the girl and he says, he says something in French. He goes, that means your butt is mine. She turns around and spits in his face because he looks like that's in a Barnaby. That's the guy is in the back and he's like, what's the score of the Cubs game? 0-0. Who's winning? Bears. So good. 312-981-7200. We got a ton of texts in here. We caught everyone's attention. Whoa, the lines just lit up. Everyone's going to give me their favorite. You got to tell me why it's your favorite, though. I don't just throw me out a pizza place. We don't need to do a list of pizza places. I want to know why this is your cult place, why you became a member of the pizza cult. Stay with us. 312-981-7200. We're talking about the cult pizza, which is awesome because I can't even keep up with all the different places that are texting in right now. Freddy's in Cicero. 312. That's a good place. That's the other thing too. I need to take a pen to this stuff, print this out, because last year I was trying, or 2 years ago I was trying to go to each one of these places down the line. I was kind of going to do a Steve Dolinsky pizza trail. I got to Bill's, Vito and Nick's. I've been there before, but I went there again. And then the great place that Mary told me to go to in North, I think it's Northfield or maybe close to Lake Cook Road. I screwed up. I can't remember what it is. It was a good place. And I think we talked about it on air at the time, but I had fallen off because my son has lost interest in pizza, which I'm like, what? Or worse, he's found interest in crappy pizza. There's nothing worse. And you know what I'm talking about if you're a parent. When your child is like, I don't know, what about Domino's? And you're like, there's 19 independent places in the same vicinity. How about a different place? Little Caesars? Costco? What are we doing here? Try not to food shame you, but D'Agostino's is right there. Pie-Eye's right around the corner. Jimmy's Pizza. We did Jimmy's. That's the start of where Vinny's Pizza in Rockford. There's a lot of Jimmy's and Vinny's and Bill's and Bob's. I love it. That's a good pizza place. It has to be the name of your pizza place has to be a first name or the namesake family, right? If you go anything outside of that, I'm skeptical. I'm dubious. All right, let's get into this. Reds and Harvards, unfortunately, they closed. This person says Six Rios is Nick and Vito's at 103rd and Pulaski, but that would be Vito and Nick's, I'm assuming, which is more like 87th and Pulaski, maybe? Pete knows. That's where he grew up. Where's Vito and Nick's? What's the address, Pete, for... They say Nick and Vito's at 103rd and Pulaski, but I'm like, that's not...
I think they have a couple of them, but oh, their original is like at 83rd and Pulaski. Oh, there you
go. 83rd and Pulaski, right. State Line Pizza in Hammond. Been getting their pizzas for 50 years. Wow. That's awesome. John's Pizza on Western Avenue, north of Armitage. Thin, perfect blend of ingredients. Great crust. They also have a football-sized pizza.
Nick D just walked in and said, John's.
No, there you go. John's on Western, see? That's great. Charlie Fox's Pizza in St. Charles. They only use fresh ingredients, homemade dough. Okay. They do the double dough. Come on. That's the best. I guess sausage, can you make a double dough? Double dough or double dough? No, double dough. Okay. Which reminds me, we got the Chicago Accent Challenge, which is coming back. Season 2. It's just like American Idol, The Voice. We did the Chicago Accent Challenge 2 years ago. It's back. Season 2 coming up next week. Ted McClellan's in. That has to be one of them. Are you ordering dough? Double dough. You have to say, order this pizza with double dough. Pizza Italia in Libertyville had only ordered thin crust, but when the deep dish was lauded by Steve Dolinsky, I tried it. I've been enjoying it ever since. Dolinsky did a book. He does the pizza tour. He did a Chicago pizza book, which went into all these places. 815? Do you know Hartman's? I see. They're talking about Dusty's Pizza. This person grew up in Johnsburg. They're like, yeah, I know Dusty's. Papa Pizarro's in Westmont. Great medium weight pizza. There's always a place, Bob. Always a place for medium weight pizzas. I'm with you on that. I think the deep dish is too much. Sometimes the thin crust is too thin. Medium weight. I like the way you say that. Medium weight. Best slice pizza in Rockwell. I can't remember the name of it. Okay, we'll skip that. Bertoli's River Pizza in River Forest. Excellent. That's my place. Peretta's at Waveland and Central. Okay. The Bunny Hutch in Lincolnwood. I didn't know the Bunny Hutch had pizza. Well, they got some great batting cages behind there. Did they open this weekend? I got to take my son. My wife is flying out to San Francisco for a friend's birthday party, like a getaway kind of weekend. And so it's just me and my son for Super Bowl week. And so we go right into father-son type stuff. There's no time to waste. When the whole family's together, there's a lot of time to waste. But when it's just the two of us, I'm like, I gotta prove my worth. I gotta get over to the arcade. I gotta think about pizza. Gotta make a run to the Mariano's for the Super Bowl food. All that kind of stuff. I'm looking forward to it. But in the summertime, there's a lot more options. I think I might take them to the neon indoor mini golf place in the old mall on Harlem.
Mm-hmm.
Your place up there where they do neon mini like dark light mini golf inside. That's probably really busy on a Saturday. All right, we'll just stay home. Watch comedians in cars getting coffee. All right, keep going here. I didn't know that Bunny Hutch did pizza, but... Okay, 815 says, Gino's Italian Restaurant in Rockford? Rockford, yes! I would love... That's great. And next time I'm in Rockford, I'm going there. Manzo's, Irving Pork in Sawyer. That's from John from Sterling. He grew up there in the 80s on the north side. Arnie's in Indiana? Take that. Eduardo's Pizza in Munster, Indiana has great stuffed and thin crust pizza. Is that the same one? Gio's, Harlem near Diversey, great cheese. Only do pizza carry out delivery for 40 some years. No room in that place for video poker, though. You're listening. 708, Phil's Pizza in Oak Lawn. Pizza's ready in 25 minutes. These are great. Bianchi's in Ottawa, Illinois. The sauce and the sausage. Like nothing else. It's worth the drive. S&T Provisions Pizza in Chicago. Diamani's? Damiani's Pizza from Dalton. And Linwood. 412 says, this weekend, Justin, you should just order a keg of beer. Don't tell the wife. What are you talking about? Me and the 12-year-old going to drink Natural Light? What are you talking about? Doughballs in Aurora Hill. Aurora, Illinois. Sorry. You don't have to say Aurora, Illinois when you text me. I know where Aurora is at. If this was a national show, if it's like Larry King, I'd be like, Aurora, Illinois. But I know Aurora. Now it just looked like you were saying Aurora Hills. Something like that. Anyway, good beef sandwich and hamburger dough balls. Good name. Vince's in Rochelle. Take that for sure. Imo's or Emo's in St. Louis. I'm getting out of town now. Joe's Pizza in Olney. Come on, that's awesome. Joe's Olney. 312 says, take him to Superdog and Rolling Stone Records. I'm in. That's a good idea. He likes Superdog. That's right by the golf. You can go. That's what I'm saying. I can go to the Neon Golf Place, and then I can roll to Rolling Stone Records and Superdog. 815 says, I'm with Bianchi's as well, Ottawa. Awesome. All right. Good stuff. A lot of great stuff. Thank you so much, everybody. I love it. I'm a big fan of cult pizza places. I'm glad that Borelli did this piece, because... I was trying to figure out how to say it. You know, I always talk to my wife about how do I get across to you that I would like a place, I like one pizza, and I like to go there every Friday. How do I get across? Because it always starts with me going, I don't know, we could just get a pizza. And then it ends up on some food app ordering empanadas from somewhere, and I'm like, this is not what I thought we were doing. I always lose. So I just want one pizza place. I believe in the cult of pizza. Dominic's. Like the Dominic's the store? Aurelio's and Homewood, they're always showing up. 312 says, just heard you mention pizza delivered in a paper bag. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about? Like that paper bag that's on the top of it, like the paper sleeve. I don't know if it's me, but I've been getting pizza from my favorite place since childhood, and I can still taste the difference just by thinking of that paper bag. Yeah, I think there's something to that, right? La Villa on Pulaski near Addison, over 40 years. La Villa. Country Pizza Inn, Newport Richey, Florida. Oh, wow, awesome. Thanks for listening. Yeah, that's what 412 was saying. Dominic's used to make a hand-toss pizza for $5. Wow, take that, right? Windy City Pizza in Oswego. If I'm not able to do the emergency closing center stuff and mention all the different districts naming pizza places from all the different towns in the Chicagoland area is a close second. I'll do that all night. All night! I love it. If Dolinsky didn't do this project, I feel like this could be us. We could do it. You know, the 720 WGN Pizza Club. And we all meet up at one of these places and pick it once a month. What do you think of that? That's a good idea. Would you do that, Pete? Would you be into that? Like if we had a Blackhawks game or something like that, and we had a night off, and we had a big pizza, then maybe we get the station to pay for it? that's where the plan falls apart. No, we could go to Mary and say, hey, listen, we need, you know, a table for 10 or 15 or 20 or whatever's coming through. Maybe we cap it. And we do a pizza club where we do two pizzas and we meet up on a Thursday or once a month, like the last Thursday of the month, whatever it coincides. And we pick one of these places like Pizza Villa and DeKalb or Pat's Pizza on Lincoln. I like Pat's Pizza, yeah. Going there for 50 plus years. Also D'Agostino's. 630 says, went to grammar school with one of the daughters from D'Agostino's. Of course. That's the beauty of D'Agostino's. There was a point when my dad walked past D'Agostino's. My dad grew up at on Lakewood, right by Wrigley Field. And when he goes over that place, he gets a pep in his step. Real cocky. Starts looking for the old neighborhood where there's nothing there anymore. It's Southport, all that, and all that's all turned over. But he still finds it. Walking past D'Agostino's one time, stops, you know, abruptly and walks into the takeout area where all the guys are in the back making the pizza. He's like, hey, is Tommy around? And the one guy's like, Tommy's not, what? Like, and then the other guy's like, no, Tommy left an hour ago. Like, that's so perfect, right? I love my dad. How great is that? That's great. But that's the kind of pizza place you need, right? It's a cult of, you know? Is Tommy there? 312-981-7200. I love the pizza club idea. I think we're onto something. We'll take our break here, the last one. I'll read off. I still have, there's 25 different places I'm going to get to here. 312-981-7200. But I'm going to take this and print this out. And I love the idea of a pizza club. I think that could be great. Justin Kaufman and the pizza club gang. We do it once a month and all these great places that you're mentioning. It's 720 WGN. Stay with us. So many great places still coming through here. It's amazing. You start talking about cults of pizza. Chris Borelli had a great piece in the Tribune yesterday about the 16 cult pizzas in Chicago you don't know unless you're part of the cult. And I would say that he needs to expand his search because we all have a cult pizza place. Pizza cult is family. It's where we go no matter what on a Friday night, get our pizza. Like Dusty's Pizza was for me in Wonder Lake, Illinois. And obviously for all the people who are texting in over and over and over, it means a lot to them as well. And it's none of the 16 that are mentioned here. That's what I mean. To just do 16, that's just a jumping off point. And I really am. I'm really into the pizza club. I think we're into something. We can all hang out. Drink old style in a PBR glass. Maybe some RC. You know, I'll get a 3-liter of RC for the table. That's how it works. All right, Windy City Pizza gets another vote in Oswego. Keep going. 708 says, Dino's Pizza on Higgins, east of Harlem. Also, Super Rosa on Lawrence by Harlem. Some good stuff. There's nothing better. This is a good one. 708 says, Angelo's Pizza on Mannheim by Tui, right next to the IHOP. That's how we're going to do all of our stuff from here. And so Chicago, over by the IHOP. You know, on Tui, over by that IHOP. Oh, yeah. No, I know what you're talking about. That's good. X and I used to go all the way to Crystal Lake from Downers for Nick's Pizza. So Crystal Lake, Nick's Pizza. Wow. Okay. Alsa Nice Pizza in Romeoville. Is it nice? Is that right? I got to look closer. Atsa Nice Pizza in Romeoville. That's a nice pizza. There we go. That's a nice pizza. Romeoville. Learned a lot about Romeoville this week. Okay, we'll keep going. We got plenty, man. Jeez. Pizza Joint in Rock Island. That would be a good one. Chesdans. Chesdans. Formerly on Archer, now in Homer Glen. Okay. How about Perna's? in Rock Falls. The Bears ate there in 86. Of course they did. That's always the best. If you can, any of the 85 Bears, any of the 85 through 90 Bears ate at your pizza place, you're in. Right? Pizza. Paretta's on Waveland and Central. There was another one for there. Keep, there we go. Gosh, man, there's so many. I can't even keep up. They just keep multiplying. Marie's on Lawrence, just west of Pulaski, going for 30 years and go every time I take a trip back home. Marie's is getting a lot of love lately. I've noticed this because I've lived in Chicago for a while and known Marie's, and I don't know if it's like in the last 5 years where it just seems like everybody's talking about Marie's. Let's go Brian on the line. Brian, what's your cult pizza place?
Hi, I was going to say Gino's. That's yeah. Was once at Superior and St. Clair and also Rush and Walton, yeah. But is now at Ohio and Dearborn. I don't know. I haven't had that in a long, long time, but it's the one that used to be at Superior and St. Clair was where all the art students
yeah,
went
that's
on
great,
for
right?
a field
that's,
trip to the Art Institute.
And that was but where also, they would put, that's where they put, they draw on the walls. There's a lot of, that's a classic.
Yeah, they,
there. Yeah.
Believe it or not, took all those autographs over there from that wall, from Superior and St. Clair to the new one at
oh, they did?
Dearborn in Ohio.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
They also had that pizza at Kelsey's in Barrington, too. It's,
oh, really?
It's a place kind of far from here. I wanted to keep it, I didn't want to say much about it because it's the best kept secret out in Barrington.
That's a good cult member. You don't tell any. It's just like Fight Club. It's Pizza Club.
They got a great beer garden, and it's decorated every Halloween and Easter and all through the summer. It's the best beer garden in Chicago.
Right.
I still think.
Well, right,
not
we'll
in
check
Chicago,
it out. Put it on the list. All right, thanks, Brian. Appreciate it, Donna. Donna, which one? What's your? What are you a cult member for when it comes to pizza?
Pizza Grinders over on Clark Street in Lincoln Park.
Oh, yeah, wow.
Pizza in a bowl is unbelievable, and their Mediterranean bread is fantastic too.
That place, is that the place that's, it's on, it's, is it on Clark Street?
Yes, it is.
I've never been in there, yeah.
Oh, you have missed, it's been there for a gazillion years, and they make pizza in a bowl.
Is that the,
and they
is
come
that the,
to the table and
right.
turn the bowl over on
and
the
I've
plate.
Seen that, I've seen that, but that's, every time I go past that place, there's a line out the door.
Well, so, that tells you something, don't it?
It tells me that I don't have enough patience in my life. But that sounds good. All right. Well, I'm going with you next time, Donna. It's obvious that you've got the password to get in there.
Well, I used to live right across the street.
Yeah, that's awesome.
To be close.
That's good. Thanks, Donna.
Bye-bye, hon.
Bye. All right. Yeah, that's am I right? That's the place, right? The Oven and Grinder place. Every time I go past there, I'm like, you got to be kidding me. It's like a classic, like, doesn't matter what time of day, 45-minute wait. I think it's a really small place in there, but they got the pizza in the bowl. It's like a bread bowl. 217 says Falco's Pizza on Archer Avenue. Nice flaky crust, good sauce, balanced toppings, good burgers too. 412 says the pizza club should meet at the old Showcase Studio at the Trib. They won't let us in there, man. That is a, that would be a good spot, but that's luxury condos. That's going to be your frou-frou pizza from here on out. You go over there, it's just going to be like, this was imported straight from Italy. This cheese pizza is $79. No, if we do the pizza club, we go to the place, right? We'll drive out. That's a nice. Another one for that's a nice pizza in Romeoville. Two of them. That's good. That's leading. 630. Newport and Racine. Oh, there you go. Okay, keep going here. 630, back in the early 80s, my husband and I used to order from Pizza Castle so often, they knew our number before there was caller ID. Now they got your number on file, right? They figured out computers, but you're so right. That's such a, you knew it. You knew you were a part of the cult if they knew your number. Gigi's Pizza in Evanston. Yeah. Jeffrey Bear needs to do a show on Channel Lever where he rides his bike to all these places. And it'll be like a cool Corky Siegel, like harmonica, like drum, violin kind of song. Boom, boom, boom. Next on the trip, we go to Romeoville and check out That's a Nice Pizza. Jeffrey's stuff is so good. Wayne's Pizza in Arlington Heights. Never heard of Wayne's. Gennario's in Winfield. rated one of the best pizzas in DuPage. Okay. Gennaro's. So good, you guys. So great. Take it. Wow. All right, so it sounds like we've got an idea here. 708 says, if you do Pizza Club, if you go to the pizza joint, the joint would probably pay for the pizza simply because of the free plugs. Yeah, I mean, that's not what we're in it for, though, right? We could all pony up $5. Maybe not Pete. Pete's like, man, I'm cutting out cheese. All right, yeah, I feel like we could all... the station could pay for it. They're $20, right? $50, $60, $100. We figure it out. I love it. I love the idea. I think it'd be fun. Like a summer thing, right? We started in the spring and summer where it's not... we don't have to worry about weather getting to different places. We announce it here on the show. We do a caller kind of thing, like maybe the top, you know, five or something like that. Callers get reservations, and we all go down and try and take pictures and put it on Instagram and do the whole bit, right? Be fun. And you get to meet Pete Zimmerman. How great is that? Beggar's Pizza getting a shout-out. Lots of locations on the south side. And the Quonset Hut in Waukegan. Great. Old school. All right. Well, there you go. That was fun. Cult pizza tonight. Thank you for texting in and giving away your secret. We're going to exploit it by giving business to your favorite. Next time you go in there, there's going to be a line so long. And it's going to be all yuppies. They'll be in your way. And they'll be like, not tonight, Greg. Sorry, we don't have time for you. And you'll be like, ah, Justin. Anyway, it'll be a lot of fun. I think we're onto something with Pizza Club. All right, that's going to do it for us tonight. Nick DiGilio coming up next here on 720. If you missed out earlier, in the 8 o'clock hour, we determined the best Chicago movie of all time. Tonight was the final. It was between the Blues Brothers and Ferris Bueller, two of Nick's favorite films. Blues Brothers won. Blues Brothers is now, I mean, definitive. We did so much homework and so much research and so much time. This was a deep project. This was not just a one-night, hey, what do you think's the best movie? Okay, yeah, that's it. Yeah, this is definitive. The book has been written. The record has been signed. The best Chicago movie of all time, there is no argument anymore. The argument has been made, is the Blues Brothers. So next time you're at a party, someone says, wants to have that? You go, no, 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 no. It's Blues Brothers. We already did this. Next topic. So tonight we did that. Tomorrow night, we're back here. We've had this great run, and it's great to reconnect with a lot of listeners to be able to have a consistent run because, of course, the Blackhawks were off for the NHL All-Star Week. And they're back on the air Saturday. We're back tomorrow, and we also are back on Monday. So we've got a couple shows before we're preempted for Blackhawks games, which we're excited about. Tomorrow night, my old pal Adam Davidson will be on. Adam is an economics writer for The New Yorker, and he did the podcast Planet Money, which was, he won a Peabody or Pulitzer, one of those big awards, for the reporting he did explaining what happened in the financial crash of 2008. He essentially explained subprime mortgages. That's how he became famous. And he has a new book out about how the economy of 2020 is much different than the economy of the 20th century. And even though there's bad news today and it's up and down and all over the place, this is much more in line with what the economy's always been like in the United States of America. So we'll have that conversation tomorrow. We'll take your calls. We'll continue to bring you great radio here at WGN Radio every single night as we do on the weeknights. Nick DiGilio up next.